Okay, what's poppin', everybody? The Drew and Mike Show is in the DealsInTheD.com studios for Tuesday. And today, we have special guest stars.
Hey.
As in Derek St. Holmes of the Ted Nugent Band. And boy, I tell you, if you want to look at the, take a bullseye to the heart of Ted's career, it's the three albums Derek is on. I don't think that's a coincidence necessarily. Not taking anything away from Ted.
Ted, where you at?
And then after Derek, we're going to talk to Gary Graff about his 10 most influential albums. And we'll just have to...
I think it's going to be before, right? Didn't we flip-flop that in our pre-show meeting? Now we're having our in-show show meeting?
Gary Graff is first. Derek St. Holmes is second.
I was first.
Okay.
That's right,
yes.
Trudy.
First is for Gary.
And Gary was moved, but we actually moved Gary for a change.
I know.
So cool.
Felt so good, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a huge power move.
Aww.
Yeah, Gary was going to come on at 5:15, and then there was some confusion, and then we asked him to move up to 4:30. And I guess, Trudy, was there any hassle with that?
No, he was right there. He's very complicit.
Very surprised.
Last we heard for information, I am a big shot.
Last we heard from Gary, he was playing softball. And then there was a story today about at a baseball field in Pontiac, a guy got hit with a bat, and I'm like, it could have been Gary. It's the same day.
Wow, that's heavy.
Like, that could have been me.
Could have been Gary.
Ooh.
Could have been Matt.
Okay.
Could have been Matt.
All right.
So he just checked in just a second ago to claim that he gave you a couple of topics to talk about earlier, Drew. So Gary's already asserting his dominance.
Well,
get ready.
I had previously... Okay, my text with Gary.
Kind of a big deal.
I said, any questions for Derek St. Holmes? We're going to have Derek on, meaning today. Mm-hmm. And it's understood that you already talked to him. He wants to know if he and Brad Whitford are up to anything.
Yes.
And what Brad?
The answer is yes.
Oh, and what Brad? Oh, okay. I like that second question.
Is it about the drummer?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, some people are in that question. Did we ever figure out who the fifth member of Aerosmith was that we couldn't name at the beginning of the show?
Oh, Tom.
Tom Hamilton.
Hamilton.
No, we knew that, didn't we? Or did we not
Joe
know
Perry,
Joey Kramer?
Brad Whitford, Joey Kramer.
Okay. All right, Hamilton. We could only get four of the five for like the longest time.
Joey Kramer, I'll just say it again. I know I said it recently, but he's the guy who, when Aerosmith reformed and, you know, everybody was on the level, everybody's paying attention, everybody's off drugs, everybody's mm-hmm. sober, everybody in the stadium is sober, too, because you can't even buy beer at the concerts. Anyway, he had kind of a fit because he said he was getting way less than what he was supposed to get for their tour. And they said, what are you talking about? It's split five ways. And he said, okay, think I'm not paying attention. Think I'm just some big stoner. Well, I took the capacity of every stadium, multiplied it by the ticket prices,
right,
and divided it by five, and that's not what I got.
Yeah, that's not how it works. Did you less the cost?
No.
Oops.
Cost? What are you talking about? We get the whole thing.
Oops.
He thought that was covered somewhere else, I guess. But I'm trying to remember who revealed that. It might have been Steven Tyler, actually.
That's really embarrassing.
I know. I thought that was so cute. I'm not sure he entirely backed down either. Zach Reiser, well, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, and Deals.
Well, I use a calculator for that.
They're all fired up because COVID is over. Well, not quite over, but... they've got it all down. They're socially distancing. They can deliver you your car if you're concerned. They're back in business. Everybody's back at work.
COVID-19!
And they've got some great deals like the 2020 Ram Quad Cab Bighorn for only $188 a month. Or if Jeeps are your thang, 2020 loaded Jeep Compass at $125 a month. And there's always a new 2020 Jeep Grand Cherokee as low as $247 a month. And the Wrangler right now gets Zot employee pricing for everyone. 0% financing. And $1,500 in rebates if you want a new Jeep Wrangler right now. Speaking of right now, you better hurry because the shutdown has inventory drying up quickly. That means your best selection is now.
COVID-19.
So get the party started at DealsInTheD.com.
Did you see the update on the Ford Bronco? You see that story?
I don't think I did.
Some people have been waiting like for the news and the release of the Ford Bronco, and Ford's like, we are going to land. It's going to land. We're going to release it July 9th. And then everybody all of a sudden went, which I don't know who are these people that knew it, but they go, July 9th, that's OJ's birthday.
Oh, come on, really?
So now the response is, oh, what a huge mistake by Ford to release it on his birthday because people are going to connect it. And my thought was quite genius, actually, because people are going to connect it anyway. So now there's a whole new story about it, and more people can learn about the Bronco.
I thought it would have been kind of cool. I think it would have been kind of cool if they put it out on OJ's birthday and just went, whoa, whoa, whoa.
It is. That's what they're doing.
They literally had a press conference and went, whoa, 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 whoa.
Juice is going to be, I need one of those immediately. He's going to want, and then AC will get one.
Oh, they've got a pre-order. I'm more for the Bronco
than anybody. That was really cute how him and AC had matching cars.
I know, how ridiculous. Oh my God, there were so many ridiculous things about that. Well, that would fall right.
Michelle Krebs, executive analyst at Auto Trader, said, I'm not quite sure what to say. He's not, is he currently murdering people?
They made a boo-boo, okay?
I think it was brilliant. Well done.
Honestly, the whole thing with Juneteenth, I couldn't get over that was really happening because I'm like, we had no idea what Juneteenth was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, in fact, no one else did have any idea because we talked about the fact that what happened was a pastor in Clio came home. Well, he said he walked out the door to his car spray-painted with racist terms and Nazi signs, swastikas, but they were the swastikas were backwards. So it was kind of weird because he's in a nice neighborhood, and it just something didn't feel too right about it. But he quickly got two GoFundMes up somehow.
Yeah, well,
and we talked to him, Hubert Roberts.
Yes, we did.
And very, very nice man.
In talking to Hubert, we found out that he knew exactly why it had happened because it happened on Juneteenth. And, of course, as everyone knew then, Juneteenth was this celebrated day in African-American history. And it also is celebrated with use of a red ribbon that they tied around the rearview mirror? I believe it was.
I don't remember.
And we were just scratching our heads going, what? Really? Does every racist knows what Juneteenth is and celebrates it by doing something like that? Anyway, it was really, seemed a little shady, but that's when I learned what Juneteenth was.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I shouldn't have heard of it. In fact, somebody's campaigning for a holiday on Juneteenth.
Me?
Now.
I was.
No, not just you.
I want a national holiday. That's the way to bring people together. More days off.
So
more
Trump
days off.
Yeah.
Trump booked his. Yeah, I'm all for more days off. Trump booked his first speaking gig on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
And immediately, it's Juneteenth. Everybody knows what Juneteenth is. It's very important. And also that
well, shouldn't somebody in his administration have known that? Shouldn't somebody have been like,
well, somebody at Bronco should have known it was OJ's birthday too.
Yeah, but with Trump, it was also tied. It was also tied to Tulsa.
You're right. That's true, Brandon.
And honestly, Tulsa, which came to my attention when Mark brought it to my attention, I didn't realize that the worst racial incident in United States history occurred in Tulsa. I honestly didn't know that. I would have guessed Montgomery, Alabama.
Sure.
I would have guessed multiple places.
Selma.
I never would have
guessed. Did you see 60 Minutes last night?
Yeah.
I have not watched it
yet.
Their segment
was about how there are a lot of people who had no idea about that because it was scrubbed.
There's one part of that 60 Minutes. It was a really interesting piece. Where this guy says, he's like, in my class at Oklahoma University in 1998, I'm doing African-American studies, and the professor starts talking about the Tulsa massacre, and I raise my hand and said, sir, I'm from Tulsa. That didn't happen because nobody taught it.
I don't remember.
Not even in Tulsa.
I honestly don't remember it. My history growing up or in college, for that matter. So anyway.
Kind of interesting, though.
Death Wish Coffee, I'm wearing their t-shirt today. They have great merch. Go to deathwishcoffee.com/Drew. Yeah, go ahead, go to /Drew. Use the promo code Drew15 at checkout to receive 15% off your entire order of Death Wish Coffee. Not for pussies. And, of course, deathwishcoffee.com. They got all kinds of merchandise like my cool t-shirt or the mugs or what have you. So, Death Wish Coffee, there you go. They're back. They're back for a while. And if you want to get refills on your Death Wish coffee from your original order, you should do that. Hopefully you like Death Wish coffee, and you will.
It's good shit, man.
Did everybody watch 30 for 30 last night?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, I did not. I wanted to. I was working on
Dare you, Mark.
Well, nobody else answered.
But no, I'm that's definitely what I want to see because it fascinates me. That era of baseball really brought me back into it because I told you before, once the lockout happened in what 94 or whatever, I just didn't jump back on until boom, here comes all these homers.
Yeah, and you know, I'll never forget it. It was certainly a big deal, but I just thought
a lot of homers.
I thought something stunk from the very beginning.
I didn't like it.
And I thought the Maris chase was so exciting in the fact that no one could seem to pass Roger Maris. And there were some big sluggers who tried. Willie Mays, Matt Williams had 33 one year at the All-Star break. Reggie had 37.
Can I ask a really deep baseball question here? Looking at Roger Maris's stats.
Sportscast.
I know, I'm sorry. This would probably be radio for one.
It is not a sports podcast.
And I could have asked him like an hour ago and just didn't. So Roger Maris, that really seemed like an anomaly in his stat lines, the 61 yeah. home run. So he's like a Brady Anderson of the 60s.
No, he did have 40 and 33. I'm sorry, 39 and 33 in other seasons. He also hit over 100 RBIs multiple games. Times.
How old was he, too, in 61?
He was 26 years old.
There's the difference because that's your prime, right?
Pretty close, yeah.
Brady Anderson, he was 35 or 33 when he hit 50 home runs.
But prior to that, he did win the MVP. Prior to that, and was an All-Star, a Gold Glover, and stuff like
how many
that.
Career
so it wasn't
home
like
runs?
He was. It wasn't like that one singular season, even though we don't see him in the Hall of Fame.
How many career home runs?
275.
He had 61 in one season.
275 is not exactly. I mean, it's not.
No, it just seemed odd.
Nothing.
He's doing roids or anything. I just wondered what it was attributed to.
He was also, he had a fabulous arm in right field, just a drill. He was a good defensive player. He was considered a good base runner. He was a good all-around ball player who did have good power. And in that Yankee lineup with Mickey Mantle and some of those other people, you know, he probably got a lot of protection.
Mantle had 54 that year. Because he was protected by...
Up boys.
Stupid.
But Mantle got hurt in September.
That's as dumb of his name as Bash Brothers.
Mantle, people wanted Mantle to break the record.
Yeah.
They did not want Roger Maris to break the record. So he took a lot of shit from a lot of people.
That sexist drunk. Is Mantle canceled now?
I don't think so. But yeah, Reggie Jackson had 37 at the break in 69. Frank Howard had 34 at the break. Frank Howard hit 10 home runs in 6 days.
Wow.
That's pretty, yeah. Yeah, I was blooping my way through that, and then I heard on the 30 for 30 that Sammy Sosa hit 21 in 22 games. Oh, my God.
Those numbers are ludicrous. But
I was also using corked bends and stuff. Yeah. Cheater.
Something did not seem right about that to me. I celebrated it. I enjoyed it, but I just felt like something is weird when two people break it at once.
Best thing for baseball. And yeah. Griffey was in that. That's what bothered me about it. I don't really like McGuire or Sosa, but I really liked Ken Griffey Jr.
I did too.
Yeah.
And I like those kind of lithe guys with quick wrists.
Oh.
And
well,
who just have
a hot, quick wrist, all right.
Hand-eye coordination. And, you know, Ernie Banks was a little guy. Not a little guy, but he was thin. Hank Aaron was thin.
You like
Ken
what
Griffey,
you see, huh?
Ken Griffey was thin.
How about Rod Carew, who was today's special guest on No Filter Sports? You should check that one out.
Rod Carew was a phenomenal hitter. He was not a home run hitter, but he was a great hitter.
How many batting titles did he win?
I think
like
he
seven
won
or
seven,
eight?
Yeah.
Flirted with 400, didn't he?
Yeah. He hit 388. He was a great hitter.
Looks like you're keeping your bod pretty tight.
But anyway, yeah, so I wasn't crazy about those guys. I did see the picture of McGuire in 89 in the
with
locker
his shirt
room.
Up.
He is so pedestrian looking. It's amazing. I don't know many guys that at 22 look like that and at 33 or whatever or 32 or 31 look like a completely different human being. That is really unusual. And Sammy Sosa did the same thing.
I think Sosa's transformation was even more remarkable.
Oh, to a white person?
But he's black again. He was black last night.
Oh, I didn't see the 30-30. I was going to ask you, did he look white? Because there was a period where Sammy Sosa really, really appeared Caucasian.
He became a white cowboy, remember? He had the cowboy hat.
Well, the wife of the Jonas brother, Priyanka somebody?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was getting a lot of crap this week for promoting whitening creams.
Priyanka Chopra?
Maybe some people want to be whiter. I don't know. Maybe now's not the right time, though.
Is Whiteout canceled? We don't need Whiteout anymore.
Can I play? Did you like the 30 for 30?
Yeah, I was enjoying it. I didn't watch the whole thing yet.
Wasn't the best one. Can I, at the risk of getting kicked off Facebook, can I play a short little clip? Do you think we'll get kicked
off? No, don't get us kicked off Facebook. Well, we don't want to do that, do we?
I'll save it for later. But it involves Jack Buck.
Sammy Sosa.
Did you see the Jack Buck part?
I didn't get that far, I don't believe. Sammy Sosa, I never liked him. I mean, when it came to Ernie Banks, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, Fergie Jenkins, Ryan Sandberg.
He's on the Cubs. How do you not like him?
I don't know why. I just never, I always, he seemed a little too good, too wonderful. I mean, he was like the Mitch Albom of baseball. I mean, did anybody ever say a bad word about Sammy Sosa? It's not that I really didn't like him. I just didn't have that thing for him like I did for Frank Thomas and for Mags and for some other guy. I mean, I was blown away by him, and I love the Cubs, but for some reason, and then in the end, nobody liked Sammy Sosa. So I was ahead of my time.
No.
And I canceled him first.
And the big difference between him and McGuire is McGuire apologized and is back in the fold in baseball. And they asked Sosa about it, and his attitude is he's just kind of a dick about it.
No, he is an asshole, and his last game in a Cubs uniform, he left the park at 1:30. He just said, fuck it, I'm out of here.
Yeah, cool.
So, you know, that's really? That's a nice thing to do as a leader of a team, a guy that people look up to.
Okay, right.
And that was a big deal in transforming people's feelings about him in Chicago. I think that's the year he left. But we didn't know he was leaving, although leaving the park at 1:30 on the last day of the season, I think.
See ya.
Something.
So, to get to his weekend, man.
True. Good point,
I know the
Trudy.
Feeling.
Yeah.
If you think about it, aren't those guys some of the original canceled people? They were canceled. They can't get in the Hall of Fame.
I know. That's stupid. That's dumb. Put them all in the Hall of Fame.
I'm not sure what to do about the Hall of Fame. When I look at A-Rod and Roger Clemens, I find myself saying, well, those guys would have done, they would have had Hall of Fame numbers no matter what.
So would Bonds.
Did Charlie Hustle ever get in?
No.
No, that's pretty, well, that's worse than steroids in my mind, but put them in by now. Why not?
Yeah, I don't.
Don't you think the gambling is worse from the inside?
Well, gambling was always considered the worst thing you could do. It's on the clubhouse door, the gambling part of the player's deal.
Unless he was the manager.
Yeah, no, he did bet on his own team.
And he can misuse, he did bet on his own team.
Yeah,
he could misuse a bullpen, which would affect more games.
That's kind of cute, actually, that he bet on his own team. Yeah. Really nice.
He believed in himself and his players. He believed in them too much. So, as far as some of the other guys, though, I feel like I don't know if you're a Hall of Famer or not without your steroids.
Rafael Palmeiro.
He sure became a... I mean, him and Sammy Sosa were not power hitters when they came up. They weren't.
Who? Palmeiro?
Palmeiro.
No, I know.
Palmeiro,
no.
I think
at least McGuire was.
Palmeiro was a great hitter, but he was not a home run hitter. He became one pretty quickly. And he also lied his ass off and said... Wasn't he the guy that just said, I did not take it? And then he was busted like a week later or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great guy.
He was a great hitter. I don't know what he would have done without steroids. I think he would have been a really, really, really good player. I don't know if he would have been that good.
And 33 steal.
Who else is waiting on the Hall of Fame to accept their steroid use?
Well, Bonds is the big one.
Yeah, I mean, I know Bonds, A-Rod, and Clemens, but there's a lot of other guys, too.
If Bonds wasn't such an asshole, he'd probably be in. Because of his pre-roid stats.
No, I totally agree. But I'm just saying, who are some of the other guys that they keep saying, oh my God, so-and-so only got 10% of the vote? Because there's a lot of those guys.
It used to be if you hit over 500 homers, that
3,000 hits.
It's automatic.
That's a lot. So that would be Manny Ramirez and is Pudge? Or wait, no.
Pudge is not in the Hall of Fame, I don't think.
Not Bagwell.
No.
How about Ken Caminiti? Definitely Hall of Fame for steroids.
No, he's not.
Actually, he's the worst steroid user because it killed him. He killed him. But I'll always have that MVP from, what, 95?
Oh, yeah.
Ken Caminiti stories.
Always have that.
They need a 30 for 30 on that.
I would love to see that 30 for 30.
On Caminiti? Remember all that audio they had of him?
Well, not only the audio, but the story is amazing. Ken Caminiti was a good third baseman. Then all of a sudden, he was a great third baseman. He was the MVP. He hit 40 home runs. I think he hit 26 in the second half of the season.
How do you know that?
I just remember. That's one of the reasons I love baseball, and they were talking about this last night at 3 for 30, that the numbers...
I just like baseball when I was a kid.
Baseball is the numbers sport, and we love the numbers, and I do. But Caminiti, with steroids, to really get the maximum effect, you go crazy for 6 weeks, and then you take 6 weeks off, and then you go 6 weeks on, and then, if you're about to get busted or there's tests coming, then maybe you stop taking them at all. He took them straight through.
Balls to the
wall.
He
just never stopped taking steroids, and he took a lot of stuff, and he got so big, they said he was like 3/10 of a second faster running. I mean,
wow.
I've never even heard of that.
Give me some of that.
So, anyway, he could not...
3-inch biceps.
He could not get even a 2/8 boner.
All right, so here's...
He could not.
Here's a picture of
him. There was no dopamine left in his brain. It was all spent.
Here's a picture.
Oh, my God, to be so fucking big.
Here's a picture of him with the Astros. I don't know when that. That must have been his debut. Look how thin he is there.
Let me see.
And then you go to his Padre days, and he's just...
This is one massive
thing. I mean, it's insane how big he is.
The transformation is incredible.
Have you ever seen this much muscle on a man?
Is anybody using now?
I hope so.
That's apparent.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I hope.
Oh yeah, they're in some form of or another.
So how are they doing it on the down low?
Oh, they're like Lance Armstrong. They just got really good at it.
Blood doping,
weasels.
And stuff like
that. They always find out ways. It's just like
they don't leave the container in their locker for everyone to see, like they all did.
That was Andro.
Yeah,
that was legal.
But Bonds have. The cream and the clear, wasn't that in his locker too?
Oh, I don't know about that.
I thought so.
But McGuire, when someone pointed out that, hey, he's got supplements, and all these guys are taking creatine, including me. I took creatine for a short time.
I remember that.
Yeah. I used to get muscle.
Globbed up then.
I used to get these weird muscle burns in the middle of the night. I'd be like, ah!
Oh, cramps?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
It's really weird.
Those huge nipples, man.
God, gross.
What happened was I stopped working out. I didn't stop taking creatine because I thought it was wrong. I just stopped working out. So I should go back on creatine.
Hey, someone on Facebook Live, it might have been, hi, Cindy, pointed out that Caminiti's balls did shrink and disappear, didn't they?
Yes, they shrunk. I don't think like my coach. I don't think it's quite like that. But there was a real issue. And in fact, he became a big cokehead because it was the only way he could get dopamine in his brain.
Yep. And that's what killed him.
Yes. And, wait, did you say, hi, Cindy?
Hi, Cindy, yeah.
Cindy from the old days?
Oh, no, just another Cindy.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Ken Caminiti, his balls.
I like you, Cindy.
Doesn't make you think of this
There's
story.
Something too. Else that was, yes, exactly.
Am I reading your mind?
Yes.
Oh, it's a big swing, it's up, it's on, and it's not a sports podcast.
We finally got the medical description, why they couldn't come up with this first, of what the hell happened to Harvey Weinstein's dick, because we kept hearing it.
And that's all anybody's, that's what these protests have been about. I mean, why have we gotten the answer to this?
I don't know. It was weird.
All of America's been waiting for it.
Well, remember people kept saying, the testimony was, it looks like a vagina, and there's no testicles, and it was all this stuff, and in my brain I'm going, what are they talking about? What in the world are they talking about? I've never heard of a penis like this.
Soak it in salt water and see if it plumps up.
So, for some reason, I don't know who came up with this or why or how we know it's true, but it was reported that he has Fournier's gangrene.
Hmm.
Fournier's gangrene.
Oh, gross. Did you see that guy's balls?
Yeah, they were weird looking.
Doesn't it look like flesh-eating bacteria?
Kind of, yeah.
Because it seems to me that it says that if you get a cut or a scratch in your genital area, that some horrible bacteria gets in your bloodstream and it spreads, and it just totals your genitals. just
he
total.
Can't get his penis hard no matter how much he tries.
And I guess
that came out of my penis.
What if he just decided to get a sex change and become a woman so he could still, you know?
So he can assault himself.
But
what
did
a concept.
Did everybody see pictures of Fournier's gangrene?
Oh no! Why did
you didn't see pictures
of that? No,
it is. They were everywhere. It was like, what is that? It's like, it's probably what Harvey Weinstein's penis looks like. All I could think of was, I can't believe that anyone had consensual sex with him. It's so gross. I would think somebody.
What is that?
I know. It's so repulsive. I would think any woman would go, oh man, Harvey, I really dig you and I want to be intimate. And then go,
I checked him out for a quick second. He has a tiny penis, just for the record.
It's so true. Did you see a picture of it?
No, I didn't.
Do not
but
show
someone
this
described on. It to me one time. Someone who was a nurse and who sponge bathed the person who had that.
Well, I couldn't help thinking, there was the girl who bravely went to court and testified against him, and she was part of the case, who said that, yes, he raped me, he forcibly had oral sex with me, meaning him on her, and then she said, we entered a consensual relationship after that, and we had consensual sex, and I thought, okay, first of all, the rape would seem to put a big damper on the future of the relationship, but then when it's like, oh, you know, I do really dig you, Harvey, and then he says, well, I think it's time to get intimate, and, you know, this is a percent of seconds. I mean, it's impossible for me to believe that someone actually had consensual sex with him ever.
Well, maybe he didn't use his penis ever, though. Maybe it was always consensual oral.
No, that's not what they said. They said really? They had intercourse with him. Yeah. They said they performed oral sex on him. He forced people to perform oral sex on him. And it's just weird. I mean, I had a lot of stray thoughts going on, some that I'll never reveal. But among them were that, you know, there were people who had consensual sex with them because they wanted a role.
Yeah.
And then there were people that, you know, very reluctantly, almost like, you know, very borderline sexual assault, had sex with them a couple times and, you know, all the complications that go with that. But I found myself thinking, I can't believe there's any role that anyone would even like take one for the team with him on because it's so gross.
How would you put a gangrenous anything in your mouth or something else?
Gross. I don't honestly. I was really stunned, and I thought, God, that girl that you know that he assaulted, and then she had a consensual relationship with him, which was hard to. I was like, wow, what is going on here? But that's what she said, and that's what people believe, and experts say, yes, it happens.
You know what else she said?
Ah, cool mushroom tip.
You know what he said?
Who wants to suck a old man's dick?
Oh, it's almost Gary.
I would have to believe that when the consensual part of the relationship entered, and she, you know, he took his pants off, and she went, oh! That the next thing that would happen would be, okay, if this is going to be a consensual sex act, then I've got to have something signed that I'm in The Godfather as the lead female. Or, I mean, something like that. Whatever the movie, whatever the biggest movie was in, I would think you would have to be the lead in that. In fact, I'm inclined to think that anyone who was the lead female in any one of his movies must have had sex with him. Because this girl,
so disgusting.
She was being promised a role in, I'm trying to remember what the movie was. It was a way too big movie for her because she'd never been in a movie. But she was having sex with him. She was in a relationship with him.
Who was this?
The girl, I can't remember her name.
Oh, the one who testified, right.
Gorgeous.
Was it Shakespeare
girl.
Love or something like that?
It wasn't that big, but it was pretty big. But man, if you have to deal with that thing, you should get... You should be promised an Oscar, actually. I mean, that is really weird. But we're going to change directions here because Derek! St. Holmes is coming up. But first, it is indeed Mr. Big Stuff, Gary Graff, who had the indignity of being moved today.
And was available for it.
How about that?
There you go.
Gary, how you doing?
I'm all right. Staying safe, staying healthy.
Yeah, I heard you were playing softball.
I was.
With no mask on.
In the field, no mask.
Oh, at the plate?
On the dugout? No, in the dugout. What do you call it? In the dugout, we had masks on. In the field, we didn't.
Drew and I were talking about this, and I wondered, what if the first baseman is to cover first because somebody's attempting to steal? Does he have to put his mask on? Because that's not social. That's the only time you really can't socially distance.
Did you just use the word softball and steal in the same breath?
I don't know what kind of weak.
Especially old man softball and steal in the same breath.
Okay, okay. What if there's a play at the plate? You have to put your mask on really quick.
Oh, yeah, and you can do it.
Gary, what position are you playing in old man softball?
Left out, you know, the usual. I'm kind of a quick fix. I'm the team manager, so it's like wherever we need anybody at any given inning, you know, I'm just there.
So normally you're counting the helmets and the bats and all that? And
yeah,
the balls?
Yeah, making sure everybody's in line, you know, push-ups, sit-ups.
Well, I didn't know they had those manager-type guys. I remember and the guys from my high school, but... I don't have any adult leagues.
We're player managers. Usually, I'm like first or second base.
You're the Lou Boudreau of this team.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
All right. Well, Gary, who hates lists, and I've suggested lists to Gary a few times, and he always balks. Somebody who, first of all, who got you to break down and name the 10 most influential albums in your life?
I must have had like 16 of these things in a 3-week period. And it was just like, all right, get off my back. And I actually don't hate lists. There are certain things. I think the one we dusted it up on was the classic rock bracket.
Oh, yes.
Which to me was just, I'm sorry.
That's ludicrous.
No, you know, if there's a reason to be, you know, if you have like an NCAA bracket with teams in particular orders playing against other teams, for merit reasons.
Sure.
Yeah, but like we're going to throw Boston up against Rat or something. Why? You know? I mean, so.
Well, your picks were very interesting because you were totally, I think you were honest to a fault because not only did you pick the ones that really influenced you at a certain age, I think, I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah.
But you even, you know, with the Beatles, for example, you didn't say with the Beatles or Hard Day's Night. You had the TV order like quadruple album that you bought?
Right, yeah, the Alpha and Omega.
What is that? I've never seen that.
It was out there for a minute, you know, for a little while, and it was a 4-record set, all the Beatles hits. It came out, I think, just after the Red and Blue albums. You know, some real Beatle-ophiles might know better than I did, but the date I found was shortly after the Red and the Blue, and it was just, you know, there I am at home, a 12 or 13-year-old kid, maybe 11, at the time, and you know, I'd heard my older brother's Beatles music, and I have these kind of hazy memories of seeing them on the Ed Sullivan Show when I was 4 or 5 years old. And
you were 4 or 5 then.
Sorry, I was.
Were you born in 59, Gary?
60.
60.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, that was but as a record owner, I broke my Beatles cherry with Alpha and Omega.
Hot.
I mean, I guess it was my brother's, you know, Meet the Beatles and those albums that he had that got me into the Beatles. But for me, and it also, that was also one of the first albums I actually bought, you know, pulled the allowance or whatever.
Sure.
I was making.
Now, did your brother at least give you a hard time for not buying With the Beatles or Sgt. Pepper's? Did he say, what are you doing buying this stupid record offer?
He was gone and living out of state by then. He didn't even know I had this other one.
Okay.
Now, when I stole his others, but that's another story.
Did you feel you had, there were certain bands or acts that you had to put on your list, or did you ignore that?
I ignored that. I mean, I took the list at its, to do this effectively, or at least honestly, I felt like you have to come up with, okay, what lane are you going to be in for this? I didn't want it to be, hey, here's 10 random albums I liked. I went with the, hey, here's 10 albums that really influenced my listening. And most of them came from that late, you know, that late elementary, early junior high bar mitzvah age. And when you were getting the National Record Mart gift certificates and going out and starting to buy albums.
Yeah, those albums, that's true. That period, I'm convinced that like 13 to 17, I know every lyric of every song that was significant during that period. And even through college, I pretty much know a lot of music. You also picked this heavy metal, and now to pick a compilation album, it seems like somebody should have thrown you out of this whole business.
But maybe that was his way of attacking his hatred of lists.
Yeah, no, I argue, and it's funny because just before I did mine, another friend who was doing it was doing hers, and we had a discussion about the K-Tel compilation.
And
My feeling, though, is those count, and here's why. I had two on there, both Warner Special Products.
One was
Superstars of the 70s, and the other was Heavy Metal. I can take each of those albums, Superstars of the 70s in particular, and from owning that album when I was whatever, 12, when I got it, there's probably 1,500 records that I own that came from that.
Wow.
You know, that was my exposure to my first real listen to, let's say, Yes from there. And then I started buying Yes, and from Yes, you go to King Crimson, and you go to, you know, Pink Floyd and all the other prog bands. So that's probably 500 albums right there.
Well, you got, let's see, the Allman Brothers, One Way Out, great song, great exposure.
Yep.
Beach Boys, Surf's Up, you probably knew them.
Yeah, I knew the Beach Boys, but that turned me on to a whole different period of the Beach Boys.
America, Horse with No Name, Ventura Highway.
Yep.
The Bee Gees, Lonely Days. I love that song. I still like that song a lot. And To Love Somebody. Black Sabbath, Paranoid's on there. Hmm. Oh, my God.
So if that gets you listening to Black Sabbath, and then you start to go down the rabbit hole,
Pretty cool. Jackson Browne, Doctor My Eyes, way underrated song, in my opinion. I had the 45.
Classic.
The Birds, Cowgirl in the Sand. I thought that was a Neil Young song.
They did a version of it, too.
Wait, the Birds covered Neil?
I'm sorry. I'd have to look that up.
Look it up.
I'm pretty sure. Because that was on something, I think, after Sweethearts of the Rodeo, if I'm remembering it right.
Okay, he references something I don't know just to throw me off.
No, you know, Sweethearts of the Rodeo.
I remember it, but not that well. Judy Collins?
Yeah.
I've looked at Life.
Judy Collins is on there.
From both sides. Oh. Okay.
And Judy Collins covering a Joni Mitchell song, so that sends you in that direction.
Yep. Alice Cooper, School's Out. What a great song.
Uh-huh.
Oh, loved it. I remember that came out, I think I was in fifth grade, and I remember hearing it on the last day of school, and it was like the greatest three minutes of music I've ever experienced in my life.
Yep.
Yeah. The Doors, Light My Fire, and Tightrope Ride. I don't know. What's Tightrope Ride?
Tightrope Ride is on
a Gary thing.
Off Parade, I think.
Soft
Baby, won't you light my fire?
Oh, no, Tightrope Ride, I think, is on one of his other voices. I think that's the post Jim Morrison.
Whoa!
I think it's on one of those two.
What's your favorite Soft Parade song, by the way?
My favorite Soft Parade song the one that ends Stronger Than Dirt's on Soft Parade, isn't it?
Touch Me.
Touch Me, yeah.
I'm kind of a wishful, sinful fan myself,
but
I like Touch Me too.
That's a good reference.
I thought so. Eagles, Take It Easy. That's a great song.
Yeah.
Lucky Man, ELP, Faces, Stay With Me. Great song.
Yeah.
Every time I find a new Faces song, I find that, why did I only know Stay With Me for so long? Because that was like the only song that charted, wasn't it, for Faces?
That would have been in the U.S.
Yeah. Roberta Flack, The First Time
I Never Saw.
Yeah, please.
Your face.
Oh, no.
And Where's the Love? But yeah, there's a lot of stuff on there. I thought that was an interesting pick because those compilation records could really open a lot of doors, as you pointed out.
Listen, on the heavy metal one, it opens with Kick Out the Jam. Now, granted, the brothers and sisters version, so imagine my surprise when I picked up the actual Kick Out the Jams album. And more imagine my mother's surprise when I had that up loud.
I didn't know Kick Out.
Did she make you put that away, or did she take it away?
I just kind of got the look.
Oh, really? Because my dad took a few albums away from me.
What?
I never had that.
Sticky fingers.
I got the look.
Trudy, that is so not Mach 5.
No, you're right. And, you know, and he even did a Rolling Stone song in his Mach 5 4 set, but he made me take Sticky Fingers and put it out of his sight because...
Ooh.
You could not stand Mick Jagger's, you know, bulge.
Gary,
his daughter's room.
I love your pick of Spirit, 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. because I love the album. I love Spirit, and it just was a real. That's not one I would expect to see on there, but at the same time, I love that record.
Oh yeah, and that was one. I wore that one out a couple of different times.
What did you like? I mean, how did you find Spirit? But I don't see them on this compilation record.
No, that was one through reading. I mean, you know, it's funny if you really talk about what influences you when you're young. So if you start picking up Circus magazine or Rolling Stone or Cream at that time, or there's a book I got fifth grade, and remember the Scholastic book she used to get? You know, you'd have the monthly order form.
Sure.
And so for like probably 75 cents or $1.25, I got this book called The Rock People. And it was a writer named Bud Scopa, who actually was a very reputable music journalist. And he wrote about a lot of bands in there. And I read about Spirit in there. And then I saw the cover of Dr. Sardonicus and thought that was really cool.
It is a cool cover. Is Nature's Way on that?
Yep.
Mr. Skin?
Mr. Skin's on there.
Animal Zoo?
Animal Zoo's on there.
Oof. Yeah, that's the Spirit album, isn't it, the one to have?
Oh, that's the one, yeah. Yeah, okay. Without a doubt. And that's, you know, it's kind of a concept piece, although, you know, the concept piece for somebody who's very, very stoned.
Do you feel Led Zeppelin ripped off Spirit?
No. No.
No, okay. Not
really. I mean, some of those notes are there, but then, you know, there's probably some 16th century madrigal musician who thinks Spirit ripped them off. So
you're right.
There's certain templates of music that just are part of the palette.
When you were talking about your youth and reading and all that, I wondered to myself, was Lester Bangs a contemporary of yours, or was he more of a guy you looked up to?
He was older. Okay. He was older, and I think you have to be. When I started reading about music, I was not ready to read Lester Bangs.
Okay,
because it was just, you know, it was too disassociative. It was probably until mid high school that I started to get it.
Can't Buy a Thrill, Steely Dan.
Yeah, that was one that just, I loved it. I loved the music, and it introduced me in its own way to jazz. Because there were, you know, that wasn't their jazziest album, but there were a lot of jazz licks on that record. And you know, if you were conscious of that, then you started exploring, okay, what is this thing called jazz? Well, it's not what, you know, it's not what Doc Severinsen necessarily was playing, although that was good. Doc Severinsen was good. But, you know, started looking into, you know, some of the real jazz cats from having listened to that album.
What were the hits on Can't Buy a Thrill?
Well, Do It Again.
Okay.
Reeling in the Years, well, 30 works on there.
Okay,
oh, but I really loved you know, Brooklyn on that album. Great, you know, really great track. What was the other
Mild,
one?
Is Mild School on that?
No, that's on the album. Man.
Ricky, don't lose that number.
No, Ricky's on the third album.
Okay.
He's trying to stumble.
Probably my favorite Steely Dan song, but
I love that song.
Oh yeah, they finally started playing it after all these years.
Now I'm surprised to see Genesis. Foxtrot. I don't know why I'm surprised, but tell me why
that was the Genesis entry point. I'll tell you one thing about this whole exercise was I was surprised at how kind of emotionally heavy it was, because it really brought back visions of being in my bedroom and of either getting this music from or sharing it, you know, the people who were around me at the time. So by way of illustrating Genesis Foxtrot, I read about Genesis in a Hit Parader magazine in my Uncle Sonny's station wagon on a family trip to Cedar Point.
Pretty
from
Pittsburgh.
Cool. And of the seven, three of the seven people who were in the car at the time aren't with us anymore.
Oh.
So to go, you know, I mean, it really brought back a lot of that.
I thought about making my own list, Gary, and I was going to do it before the show today, so we kind of kick it around, and I thought, no, that's not enough time. This is serious. This has to, I mean,
so
if I'm going to make a list.
Nine Beatles and what?
Well, no, that's what I didn't want to do. I wanted to really come up with the 10 that influenced me, and that's,
right.
That takes time. You can't do that in 10 minutes.
Exactly. No, you know, you can't.
Stevie Wonder Talking Book. That was not the Stevie Wonder I thought I would see.
It was just, that was, you know, that was the Bar Mitzvah age album. We were all dancing to songs from, that got played a lot at the dance and at the school dances. And so you buy that, and then that sends you down the rabbit hole of Stevie Wonder, of Motown, of black music in general. You know, from Stevie Wonder, I started listening to Parliament Funkadelic, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
That's a weird jump, I think.
You go backwards to Sly and the Family Stone, and then to James Brown, and, you know, Ike and Tina Turner, and, you know, you just keep following the trail.
I can't tell you how much I love Sly and the Family Stone. I've been listening to Sly and the Family Stone a lot the last year for some reason. I mean, I've known him forever, but God, that guy was so uniquely talented.
Oh, and he was such a synthesis, even beyond Stevie Wonder. I mean, Stevie Wonder had some pop elements to his music, a lot of pop elements, but Sly took the pop and the rock,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and the soul and the funk, and made it a sound.
Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run. Well, I mean, how can anyone argue with that pick?
Yeah, that was it. That was just, you know, I remember getting the single first, and I remember still have the Time and Newsweek magazines with him on the cover, and then made the plunge for the album. Heads Together on the two, you know, the buy one, get one at whatever, half off or whatever, and get a free Roach clip along with it.
Did you say you still have the Newsweek and Time?
I do.
Wow. Because, you know, people used to mention that all the time in regards to Bruce, and now I feel like whenever I read it, I'm like, I don't think anybody gets how big that is. I mean, unless you're older.
Not as big. I'm trying to figure out what it would be like being on, I guess, Kimmel, Colbert, Fallon, and Trevor Noah at the same time. You know,
now,
and like literally at the same minute.
Gary, do you still have those in that jumble of stuff that's in your house there, in your office?
Yeah, that junk shop?
Maybe.
Have you picked up that room?
Maybe when you send a hazmat crew, they might be able to help.
I don't know why I was really surprised that office, when Mark pointed out to me, that is, just how haphazard. There appear to be a lot of piles of stuff.
I've actually cleaned it a little bit since I started getting all the crap I did.
Sorry.
After that, but, you know, there is only so much you can do.
So mentally well-organized.
Exactly.
Reflected in your office.
I can, despite what I just said to Trudy, I can tell you where everything is in here.
So with the lockdown and no concerts going on, are we just going to see just a tidal wave of new releases? Are musicians just sitting at home writing music right now?
I think some are and some aren't. I've talked to musicians who are both. You know, some kind of need to have the rest of the business churning in order to be creative, and others are taking advantage of the moment to create, to write new things.
Do you know of anything that would maybe be a surprise?
A surprise now? Anybody I've talked to or heard about are largely working musicians.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you know.
What did you think of Post Malone's Nirvana concert?
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
He did a great job with that. And I wish we were seeing more of that. There's been creative, like the Dropkick Murphys at Fenway Park was just a hoot to watch.
Yeah.
You know, in that big empty baseball stadium. And then this past weekend, the 80s show, what was it called, Back to the Basement, was a lot of fun.
Who was on it?
I didn't see that.
Let's see, Wang Chung.
Oh!
Flock of Seagulls.
Cool.
Cutting Crew was on there, New Shoes.
Cutting
Nelson.
Crew?
Yeah.
Cutting Crew's, really?
Well, one half of Cutting Crew.
Okay.
So Cutting was on. crew wasn't there for whatever reason.
All right.
So it was basically, you know, these 80s package tours that have rolled through the area, you know, in the past couple years. It was a virtual version of those.
They've been good, too. We had Fee Wabel on when they came through it.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. And they Wang Chung did a, you know, redid Everybody Has Fun Tonight. Have Fun Tonight is Everybody Stay Safe Tonight, which, of course, is kind of goofy and cloying. But the video was really sweet. Now, the video was really sweet because they got all the other bands to take part, and it was a lot of fun.
Please tell me they played dance
Shut
all
your
days.
Hole, Wayne,
they
Chung.
Didn't. No, that one of the things
what?
That was one of the things that was interesting. They didn't all play their biggest hit.
What?
They threw some album tracks at you.
Oh, that's pretty wild. We got to run along here. I got to get to hit a break, but I know Nitty Gritty Dirt Band we didn't mention. Is there anything else we didn't mention from your list?
Fela Kuti.
What's
which I know a lot of people were going, huh? you know, Nigerian saxophonist, and very, very important.
Oh, figure. You just had to do that.
No, that was an honest. That turned me on to African music, turned me on to jazz, and it was because of something I saw in 60 Minutes.
Huh? What did you? What was on 60 Minutes?
Well, it was about him and about the, you know, the situation in Nigeria and his stature as both a musician, but also in the political frame in Nigeria. And, you know, I was studying world cultures in school and saw this on 60 Minutes when I was 15 or 16. And you take a flyer, buy this album, and holy crap, this is good. What else can I get that's like this?
Well, you wouldn't be Gary Graff if you didn't do that on the list and in real life. Gary, agreed. Thanks for, you're not supposed to explain your list, but you did for us, and we appreciate that.
I appreciate the interest, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Yes, we will. We need to.
You guys stay safe.
Thanks, Gary.
Bye, Gary.
Bye-bye.
All right. You're never gonna get my love. Nitty Gritty Dirt Band was a pretty weird pick, too. He could be canceled because they did Mr. Bojangles. Maybe? No, I'm kidding.
What's the issue with Bojangles?
Mr. Bojangles?
Yeah.
It's racist.
Yeah, he would dance for white people, right?
Oh, I had no idea that he was... Oh, never mind.
I know, Trudy, this stuff comes up sometimes. I go, where was I when all this was being explained? I don't remember this. Mr. Bojangles, I happen to know, but boy, there sure is a lot that I don't know.
To that point, I was looking at some of Gary's old articles, and he wrote one about the producer of Hamilton who's from here. You know, that musical you love, Hamilton.
But I guess when everybody pretends to like...
I guess Hamilton was getting shit for not supporting George Floyd quick enough.
Okay.
Like, why is
come
that
on,
a story?
Stop.
Why
stop
is that
doing
a story?
This.
Well, yell at Gary for writing the story.
Emergency Response Services Incorporated. If you hate water as much as I do, it's great to know Emergency Response Services Incorporated is available for you to eliminate water from that mess in your basement, whether it's 6 inches or 4 feet or whatever. Boy, it's just a debacle when that happens. But thank God you can call 877-JOB-DONE. And you can call 877-JOB-DONE when there's fire damage, when there's mold,
gross,
when there's storm damage. This is what they do. This is the number to have. And of course, everyone wants to pick up the phone and call someone when this happens. All we ask is that you call these guys first and give them a shot. 877-JOB-DONE or visit 877-JOB-DONE.com. Write that number down because you need it fast when you need it. You don't want to have to go back and listen to the podcast. So there you go. In addition to helping Metro Detroit with fire damage, storm damage, and mold removal, along with the water extraction and drying needs, Emergency Response Services Incorporated. And I will also go ahead and reference our friends at Hall Financial. They would love to do a refi for you. And, of course, we're on the Hall Financial Hotline. I forgot to even mention that with the Grafmeister. And Derek St. Holmes will also be on the Hall Financial Hotline. If you haven't refinanced in the last year, they are there to help. They would love to refinance for you and probably save you money. If you haven't done it in 3 years or if you've never done it, chances are they can save you some money. They certainly will try. Or you may want to take money out of your home, or you may like taking advantage of a couple months with no payments during these turbulent times. They've got 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. Go to the webpage, click the link, fill out the online form, or call 248-308-5000. There's also DavidHallMortgage.com/DrewAndMike. Lower payments, better options, more personal attention. Hall Financial, NMLS number 1467435. And Derek St. Holmes coming up.
You've got a few minutes still.
Yeah, you know what? Can you kill a couple minutes? And
sure.
I wanted to get... I was going to say, let's see. Maybe I can kill a minute here. I want to get into this.
You might not have to kill that many.
Oh, okay. Hey, Trudy, can you kick the Dr. Roche commercial?
Yeah, because Dr. Roche wants everyone to know there's a group of people who maybe are overlooked sometimes, and those are dads, and they have Father's Day specials for this month because Father's Day is next week, and you can get your dad all kinds of things. For instance, male breast reduction. If you didn't know that was a thing, that is a thing.
Daddy.
You can decrease the excess filler in your dad bod with Evolve Trim Tone.
That dude
and,
has
there's also 360 Lipo that targets the midsection of your dad bod, your guts, so to speak. Body Tight tightens it all up. Stubborn fat areas takes it all down. Also, breast implants for the ladies for the month of June. Nice. $3,500 and summertime diva, $3,850 with a free G-shot. Nice. Down from $4,500. The G-shot alone is $1,500, and they can all do teleconsultations for your convenience at 248-338-1110. So call the offices of Dr. Roche and also go online at droche.com and check out the procedures. Back to you. Hey, baby.
Wow, that sounds like the pride of Riverview, Michigan. Derek St. Holmes.
Yep.
How you doing, Derek?
Man, that makes me want to have a G-shot. No, that sounds great.
Hell yeah.
What's going on, fellas?
How you doing, man? Haven't seen you in a while.
Oh, I know. Well, since this friggin' COVID-19, we're all in hiding.
I know, it's rough, but anyway, I was so glad to hear that you were making the rounds because, you know, of course, we talk to Nuge all the time, but you're on right. All those, you know. In fact, I was watching a concert from 1976 on Rock Palace. Do you remember, right. You know what that is? It's a German TV show?
German show that we did, yeah. That was one of the, I guess that was the second TV show we did, or for me, anyway, but yeah.
But you guys played a whole set to this studio audience who are clapping like a golf crowd. I mean, they're like,
I know.
And you guys,
I know. And, yeah.
You were tearing it up. It was just weird.
Well, we were hell-bent Detroiters. What are you talking about? We just, somebody said, okay, you guys are going to go to Germany. And we went, okay.
Wow.
And Ted had never been there. So that was the first time for all of us.
I thought it was a great record of just if you want to see Ted Nugent's band in its prime, I really enjoyed watching it because, God, you guys were tight. It sounded great.
Thank you.
Ted was ripping it up. Your voice sounds perfect.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Ted was awesome. Everybody was awesome. Cliff was awesome. Rob Grange, awesome. I mean, it was an awesome band, you know.
Derek, do you ever run into things on YouTube, like a show you guys did? Like, oh, wow, I don't barely remember that, or have you? Just,
yes. And someone sent me something the other day, and it was a picture on Facebook, and I looked at it, and I went, "Gosh, I don't even remember that." But it's funny because we all look different. I just heard this through the grapevine that somebody asked Ted why he cut his hair and how he looks different now, and I don't know what his answer was, but I mean. All that stuff, we're just, gosh, you know, what is, we're almost, everybody's a little bit older.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
But, you know, we still rock the same way. If the four of us were in the same room again and just started playing, it sounds just like it did then. It's crazy.
Well, I was looking, of course, at some of the old stuff in the Ted days. And, I mean, that bullseye of success is the Ted Nugent album, Free For All, Cat Scratch Fever, Double Live Gonzo. And that is right in when you were there, 75 to 78, 22 years old when you joined Ted Nugent's band.
Right.
That's, what was that like?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I didn't even know. All I knew is that I wanted to get out of Detroit. I wanted to play other places. And I tried to get my three-piece band, Scott, to do it, but it didn't quite work out. So when I was asked to join his band, I guess the first week we went out and we were opening up for a band called Trapeze, which had Glenn Hughes singing in it.
Oh, wow.
Playing bass. So my first week on tour, I've got to go up against this guy named Glenn Hughes, right?
Yeah.
Wow. And he was great. But, I mean, you know, I quickly went, oh, shoot, I got that. I got that deal.
real quick, you mentioned the band Scott, your first band.
Scott was the guy that provided the sound system. He gave him the sound system, so they named the band after him. No, I'm kidding.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering.
Well, you know what it was? You know what it was? Back then, everybody wanted to be British. You know, we wanted to be one of those English bands, So we just thought, Scottish. And the three of us, of course, you know, what were we, 17, 18? So he goes, yeah, what about Scott? And I went, okay, yeah, that sounds good.
How
Let's
cool.
go with that.
I kind of like it for a band name. It's kind of,
you know, it's really, it's I've never
heard. It used to be the Peanut Butter Conspiracy. So we decided to change it.
That name's terrible. Scott's perfect.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
What's, Mark, do you remember the name of the guy? I forgot why we interviewed him. I think he went to a show and something happened at the show and we called him. It turned out he had been in a band that had the most.
Daviat.
Yeah, the worst band name I've ever heard, Daviat.
Yeah, and he had to explain it. No one. Yeah, if you have to explain the name. I mean, Scott, you don't have to explain. It's just like, yeah, it's.
Well, that's how I felt about Scott, if I had to explain it. You know, but, I don't know. So now I just call it the Derek St. Holmes Band. That's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Amen. But in, you know, in reading about you entering into that band, because you were so young, and I can't remember. What's your age difference with Ted? 5 years or so? 6 years?
I think it's like five. What is he? I'm 67 and he's what?
71, 2?
71, I guess. Something like that, yeah.
I think
about
he might,
5 years.
Five,
yeah. Wait, Ted 70? Yeah. Ted 70? Yeah. Holds.
Ed 71.
71, okay. I think he might have shaved a year, I swear to God, because he used to be, Ted used to be, I think he was 13 years older than me at one time.
Yeah. And
now it's 11? That seems weird. I don't know what happened.
But, a couple years.
But anyway, the point is, you know, 4 or 5 years at that point in your life when you're 22 is a lot of years. And I guess his exposure to you was when you were playing in Scott and you opened for the Amboy Dukes at the Lincoln Park Theater. And I guess that whatever impression you made didn't go away because he comes back to you a couple years later and asks you to join the band. I mean, was it the opening for the Dukes that opened the door for you?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, it was. There was a gentleman by the name, and I think he's still with us. His name is Phil Nicholson, and he was Ted's road manager. And Phil liked himself as maybe a managerial type, you know, and seeing new talent rise up. So he grabbed me and called Ted, and we opened up for those guys a couple times. And then he said, "Hey, let's go up and talk to Ted and see if we can't get you in his band because I think Ted needs you." And I said, well, I mean, I'll go. Because Ted's fun, man. You go to Ted's place, it's like going to the outdoors carnival. Man. It's a lot of fun. So we'd go up, and I'd hang out with him all day. And at the end of the day, he would just say, hey, man, you guys, thanks for coming. And I'll just talk to you later. And I think we did that about four times. But I never got a call like, hey, man, I do think that maybe it'd be fun to have you play in the band. So I never got any stuff. I was ready to move to California.
Wow.
And the day I had my car on a tow hitch on a 24 foot rider or something and ready to roll. And I get this call from Ted's booking agent. And he said, hey, what are you doing today? And I said, well, I'm getting ready to go to California in the morning. And he goes, oh, wait. Can you come up to Jackson and rehearse with Ted, like right now? And I went, what? So I go outside and to the girl that I was married to at that time, because it's been about 12. that's a joke.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought it was less than 12.
That's Michigan humor. Yeah. So I go up there and she goes, no, go. Go, take the car and go. So I'm just gonna get it. Went up. I met those guys on the bass player's ranch. You know, he had a bunch of horses on a farm up there. And Ted showed up. We went downstairs. It was like a hippie pad, jam pad downstairs. And we went down, plugged up. And I think the drummer didn't even play a set of drums. He just played his sticks. And we sat in a circle.
Charlie Watts.
Yeah, exactly, right? And 20 minutes goes by. And Ted stops playing. He goes, how many Marshalls do you want? And I said, what? What?
Yeah.
How many Marshall amps do I want? And I said, I'll take two stacks. And he goes, okay. He didn't say, do you want to join the band?
Wow.
Or, hey, I'd like you to join the band. Or, hey, you're in the band. He just asked me how many amps I wanted.
Are you mad you didn't ask for more?
All the way down the line.
Yeah, why not? See what you can get.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't think it's any secret that the Ted's lead singers have probably not gotten the credit and the notoriety that maybe they deserve, because, you know, I barely knew Meatloaf sang on Ted Nugent songs until probably 10 years ago. And Derek, I knew who you were, but a lot of people probably don't.
Right. And, you know, at that time, I think Meatloaf was in a Detroit band called the Wilson Moore Pursuit. And, And I think it was him and I can't think of her name, but she was an incredible singer.
Oh, yeah. He was with a female. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And, but I remember being in the studio and, you know, the problem that we had back then, we were always kind of thinking in our brain, the bass player, drummer, and I, Ted, I don't know, he was out doing something else, but we were always thinking we have to kind of compete with Led Zeppelin, because that's, and Aerosmith, those were the two big bands we were kind of running with. So the album was being produced, but it didn't quite sound like those guys. It was getting a little poppy to us. So there was always a little skirmish between me and the producer. But I'd always say, and here, you know, again, what am I? I'm 12 years old telling some producer. That was my first time.
I was going to say,
I think I was right.
Derek, Hey Baby is just such an anomaly in that catalog. I mean, I love that song. I have to say it was my favorite Ted Nugent song for a long, long time, and probably still is. But it really is different. And I was watching you guys at this Rock Palace thing on German TV. It's on YouTube, by the way. I thought it was really cool. And I'm watching Ted just, you know, he's just zinging some great notes while you're playing that riff. And the vocals are fantastic, and it's just a really, I mean, it's such an accessible song. It is very poppy, but when did you write that song? And that's your song, isn't it?
Yeah, I wrote it. I think that was one of the songs I wrote at about 2 o'clock in the morning, sitting at the edge of my bed, still living with my parents, and probably last year of high school.
Well, it sounds a little less romantic than I thought.
That's why you never tell these stories, you know, because everybody's got an idea of what the song is, right? Never tell the real story. So, but I wrote the song, had it for a little bit, kind of kept it to myself, and then brought it to Ted. And as far as he was concerned, it was just cool R&B, you know.
It was.
R&B rock, yeah. And I think that's what I bring and brought to Ted. You know, it was just the rhythm and blues side. And, it was just, I kind of brought that Detroit soul kind of thing. I mean, I grew up on soul music, and as, you know, you guys probably didn't get a chance to because you're, what, 10 years younger? Or,
yeah, a little younger. Not that many for me, but I got to tell you, I've always liked pop, and when rock sounds poppy, I find that's when I will really, really like it. But I mean, I just thought it was a great song, and it was interesting watching Ted play on it on that Rock Palace thing, just because I, for some reason, it was live, and he was really on. But I mean, he's very. I mean, you're playing that riff, but he is just really killing it, just throwing in those notes.
Yeah.
We're talking to Derek St. Holmes, of course, from Ted's band, as so many people know. But also, you played with Brad Whitford, and you guys did a couple records. Wow, what's all that racket? What the hell's going on?
What are you doing?
It is so stormy here. I mean, and I'm on the front porch, we're out in the middle of nowhere.
Uh huh.
So the wind is crazy, so I'm trying to find the right spot. I'm lucky we're getting this signal, believe me.
We were talking to Gary Graff earlier.
Mother Nature.
And Gary said to ask what you and Brad Whitford are up to, if you guys are doing anything. And I know you've got a new project, but are you and Brad still doing stuff?
Well, right now, you know, we've got like five or six songs in the can, but we split off. So he went and did the Aerosmith tours again. And I've been doing my thing here in Nashville and working with different people. But it's hard, you know, when somebody goes, hey, we're going to give you a Vegas show. I mean, you can't turn that down. And that is all-consuming when they were doing it.
Sure.
Now, of course, now everybody's in hiatus and has a lull. But, I haven't talked to them
since, I don't know, maybe December or something like that. So he's doing his thing, and I haven't had a chance to see him. But whenever we get together, it's just a natural thing between Brad and I. When we get together, his riffs and lyric ideas and my riffs and lyric ideas just coincide. When we get together, it just match. We write songs like crazy, so...
Yeah, there's a lot on on Google Play. I got in there and put in Whitford St. Holmes, and there's a lot of music on there. I listened to, was it Catch My Fall?
Yeah.
Sharpshooter, I think it is. Great. I mean, they're really accessible songs.
Yeah. Well, we try to make them that way. I mean, we're rock and roll songwriters. I mean, that's what we try to do.
Hey,
and
Mark,
it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was just gonna ask Mark about something because we were talking before the show, and did you say that Derek had been shot by Ted?
Oh yeah, Ted has shot you. I guess twice. At least two times. Yeah,
what? At least twice. Yeah, yeah.
What were the situations?
Well, the first situation, we're out hunting rabbit, and we're walking along some out backwoods Michigan farm with a stone. Tree line, and we're walking on each side of it, and we're rabbit hunting, and all of a sudden a rabbit jumps between the two of us, not even 5 feet, and he puts his barrel down and pulls the trigger, and all the BBs hit the rocks, and the rocks everything bounces back and goes into my leg. I go, yeah, I can't fucking believe it. I mean, I can't doggone believe it. He just shot me.
It's like Dick Cheney.
Yeah. Harry Winnington.
He taught Dick how to shoot. It's awesome. So then the next time, I think it was to the end of a tour, and we're all at a big party at his place out in Jackson, and a tour bus and a tour, you know, road crew and everybody, and we're out shooting automatic weapons. And I'm standing behind him. He goes, Derek, check this out. And he starts shooting this automatic weapon, hitting steel plates. And the bullets are bouncing off and coming straight back. And it shot across my right arm. And I didn't even know it. Across my right forearm. And I'm standing there watching him doing what he's doing. All of a sudden, I feel all this hot stuff rolling down my arm. And I go, what is that? And I look down. And it just tore across the top.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a... A lot of fun hanging out with him.
Well,
you
just
gotta be careful.
Has everybody in the band been shot, or just are you the bad luck one?
I think just me.
I may be sending a message, Derek. I don't know.
Right? Well, I'll tell you, again, the same thing with Ted. Now, when he and I get together, we just have a blast, man. I mean, I know what he likes, and he knows what to play. So whatever I throw out. So it's just really cool.
Do you ever purposely bring up politics just to get them going?
I'm going to guess the answer is no.
Is he political? I don't know that. Well, I mean, people always ask me, they say, well, what, you know, do you have the same views as Ted? I said, pretty much, I just don't talk about it. he's something else.
He is something else.
Regarding singing, you know, Drew alluded to, you know, nobody knew that Meatloaf sang in some of those songs. And I'm sure a lot of people think that, you know, Ted sings these songs. And it reminded me of Benjamin Orr in The Cars. And everyone thinks so. Rick Ocasek, /Ocasek, however you want to pronounce his name, sang everything. Yeah. And then I find out that you were actually in a band with Benjamin. I could just imagine those kind of stories about being mistaken for that.
Oh, my gosh.
That.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the things that Ben and I really locked in on.
Yeah.
He said that, yeah, man, Rick Ocasek, all he ever did was take credit for, you know, my singing. and he goes, Ken used to do the same thing with you. And I went, yeah, I know, man. And, you know, he was from Cleveland. I was from Detroit. We're just two Midwest boys. And we had a band called Big People. You know, it had Pat Travers in it. And it had Jeff Carlisi from 38 Special. Liberty DeVito on drums, I guess, and Liberty. You guys know who Liberty DeVito is, right?
I don't
the
off the top of my head.
Billy Joel?
Yeah. Oh, from Billy Joel. From Billy okay, Joel. Yeah. I saw him. There's a documentary about Billy Joel's band, and he's in that documentary a lot.
That's right.
Because Billy's former band, he just kind of dropped the guys one by one, and one guy was really, I mean, terribly depressed about it. I think he ended up committing suicide. It was terrible.
Yeah. Was that the Hired Guns movie?
Yes. It was. And
yeah.
in fact, I was going to ask you about that, the band with Ben Orr. Was that the band before, like, shortly before Ben Orr died?
Yes.
Yeah.
He passed away with us. I mean, you know, we found out, we went and did a gig, and he came to the gig, and he didn't look so good. We all said, man, what's going on? He goes, I don't know, man, I just don't feel so good. Well, tomorrow... you know, we did a gig with somebody in Athens, Georgia. And the next day we said, hey, we're going to be in Atlanta. Let's just take you in. So we went in, found out he had prostate. No, it wasn't prostate. It was pancreas.
Yeah.
Pancreatic cancer. Oh. And he said, guys, I know the diagnosis on this deal. I just want to play all the way out.
Wow.
And we said, are you sure? And he goes, no. Book all the gigs. I'll play every one I can make.
Wow.
And there were some of the last two we did. We kind of, you know, almost carried him on stage, sat him in a chair.
Wow.
And he sang his fanny off. And I mean, whew.
That probably meant the world to him, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Just an incredible person and an incredible singer. What a talent.
Yeah, it sounded, I hadn't read a ton about Ben Orr, but I got a book. It wasn't the most complete book, but I'd never read that much about Ben Orr, and I swear it was like, wow, that was just sounded so heavy, because you had all these guys who'd been a big part of a big band for the most part, and so, you know, the band definitely had legs, there's no question, because you had a few singers and a little bit of everything, and the book basically described what you just said, that he knew things were really bad. He knew he didn't have long, but he wanted to play every gig he could. And it sounded like it was very, you guys supported him 100%. And it just sounded really sad and, you know, great at the same time, of course.
Yeah. Wow. It was good stuff, man. Nothing but great memories. So,
Derek, when are you, I mean, I don't know when we can even have a concert, but do you have plans to come up here and play? Because I know you're working on some blues. They're in Nashville?
Yeah. I was working with this girl, Eliza Neals, and I played three cuts on her new album, and she's a Detroit girl, but she lives in, I think she lives...
She sounds hot.
Exactly. She asked me to come to the studio down here, and I came in. I played on a couple songs, and we just hit it off. And so I think she's going to play the Token Lounge this fall. We have been booking it from June to July. We just keep pushing the dates back.
Oh, boy.
But as soon as you guys open up, we're going to come up there and play. And then I'm also going to bring my band here from Nashville up there and play.
All right.
Yeah.
So you'll do a gig with Eliza Neals, and you'll do a gig with your own band?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's pretty sweet. Well, let us know when the dates are true to you. You're in contact with these people, Trudy.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, you said when we open up, so apparently Tennessee is all open?
It's not open yet.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
It's open. I believe it opened, Kid Rock's got his name on a place down here on the strip, and
got in trouble.
Yeah, we know that one.
it's easier to beg forgiveness than it is to
ask permission. Yeah. Amen.
Hell yeah.
And my stepdaughter works there. She's one of the bartenders there, and it is slammed.
Really?
And I'm thinking to myself, okay, you guys won't let us work. But you'll let that happen, and then all of a sudden, the next day they get fined. And
oh boy!
So I don't know with anybody else. I don't want to get political on this deal, but I mean I don't know what anybody else feels. But sooner or later, you're going to have to open this thing up.
Oh yeah.
To let people get back to their lives, because they'd rather live their life the way they want to, without somebody governing what they can do and what they can't, than to be locked down. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, if anybody's going to get sick, it's going to be guys like me and Ted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel the same
and
way.
I don't care. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the coronavirus is way down there at the end of my road, and it's just afraid to come up here.
I feel like I can take care of myself, and, you know, I'm in the age group that people are worried about, so I'll handle that. You'll handle yourself, and Derek, you let us know. Let us know when you're coming around, and we'll play out with some Stranglehold, and thank you so much,
you guys,
Derek.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
It's great to talk to you. Let's do it again.
You got it.
Thanks, Derek.
Bye, Derek.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right.
What a fun guy, man.
Great guy.
Yeah. Here I come again now, baby. Like a dog in here. It's amazing. I never knew. I would have never been able to tell you who the lead vocals were on the Ted Nugent songs aside from Ted Nugent.
And that's Derek. Yeah. That's him right there in Stranglehold. I mean, that's as big as it gets.
That's crazy.
I must say, I mean, you got to give Ted credit for his selections.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, Meatloaf. Who would have thunk it at that time? But Meatloaf's a great singer.
Ted, where you at?
I saw some video of Derek and Brad Whitford playing, I think in 2016, and that's a tight band, man. They sounded really good. So, yeah, great to talk to Derek. And we knew him from when Ted came in and played in studio. Derek came in. It was always kind of fun because during the breaks, you know, you'd really get to talk to these guys. And we got to be friendly with Derek, and when they were coming back for the Whiplash Bash, I called Derek to see if he would come on, and he was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to come on. And then a couple days later, you know what, I can't come on. And it was one of those things where he had to ask permission.
Well, it sounded like he learned his lesson with
permission
the
denied.
Big forgiveness.
Yes.
maybe that was the moment. He's also doing, by the way, you didn't get a chance to mention it, but he's doing an online masterclass with the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp.
Yeah.
On June 22nd. There's only 22 spots, I think, or 23 spots.
No kidding.
So I don't know how many are still left, but yeah, I'll teach you how to play guitar.
Oh, there's only 22 spots, and they're doing it online?
Via Zoom. Yep.
Wow.
There's a whole lineup of it.
How about that?
And just looking at
it. To be my own fantasy, man.
Liberty DeVito just did one. He was just talking about too.
Yeah, hired guns. I forgot Derek was in that thing, but it really focused on Billy Joel's band.
Yeah,
and I was really sad because those guys, Liberty DeVito, and I think it's the bass player and maybe the lead guitar player. They were his.
Liberty.
They were his band. They were his band for, I think I want to say the biggest albums of his career, and then all of a sudden. It was time to tour, and somebody didn't get a call, and they were off that tour, and then that tour ended, and maybe it was a month later. I think it was Liberty was like gets the call that it's time to rehearse, and he calls one of the guitar players. It's like, hey man, I'll pick you up for rehearsal tomorrow or something like that. And he's like, well, rehearsal? What are you talking about?
Oh, oops.
So then he was gone. And then Liberty was the last to go. But one of the guys was actually, you know, I don't know. I don't like blaming things on people this way. But it was sort of the nudge downhill in his life. And he ended up taking his own life.
Oh, yikes.
And I guess after he was expunged from the Billy Joel world, he was never the same. And obviously, there had to be more to it than that. Huh. But
sucks.
Good job, Joel.
I know. Nice going, Billy. Billy did not come across very flatteringly in this whole thing.
Huh.
He's always running his car into things, too. So there's
that problem.
Yeah. Oops.
I want to mention the Zot Auto Team and Zot Ford and Jim Bentley and Steve Gabara. And the fact that they're back at full strength, serving all your needs. And, of course, they've got the social distancing down. If you need a car delivered, they can do that. It will be COVID-free. They've had to deal with all the things all of us have had to deal with. And they've got great deals like the 2020 Fusion for $115 a month. Or America's number one truck, a new 2020 Ford F-150 Super Crew XLT 4x4, as low as $125 a month. And then the all-new 2020 Ford Explorer, as little as $198 a month. Finally, if you prefer to own your next vehicle, they've got over $10,000 in rebates on tons of inventory. And, of course, inventory is disappearing because they're back at work and because the factory shut down. So you might want to make a selection now. Get the party started at dealsinthed.com. And so good to have Zot back at full strength. And Luke Nowacki, he's always at full strength. Of course, he never stopped because of, you know, Zoom calls and whatnot, for meetings and consultations.
The market never stopped, so.
Yeah, and the market ended up today.
Yeah, pretty crazy day.
How far down was it?
It started, boy, I want to say it was down 400 points out of the gate.
Ooh. And then it ended up
been a while around. It was up
160
a little bit.
Or something?
Yeah.
Well, that's good news.
It, because the Fed is buying corporate bonds, whatever that means.
And it's funny how they say, here's what kicked the market up today. Here's what knocked the market down. I'm like, well, I don't understand why that would even make it go down 5 points. But anyway, that's why we need people like Luke Nowacki, because they look at all these things. And, you know, with me, it's usually like, should I sell my Ford stock? And well, right now, I think GM is the best of the big three to own. It's not a sell, but it's not a buy either. And I mean, you get this advice. You have to read between the lines a little bit, because, I mean, it's not always as easy as just saying, let them pick it. I mean, you have your priorities, and maybe you have money that you want to invest, but you might need it in 5 years. If you need it in a year, he's probably going to tell you not to invest it. But a financial plan is in order. You should have one.
Yeah,
you should plan your retirement.
You never know when.
You are about to lose your job.
Gotta have that plan.
I haven't heard that dropping off lately. 248-663-4748 to reach Luke Nowacki. You can email Luke Nowacki at LNOWACKI at PinnacleWealthStrategies.com. Security Investment Advisory Services offered through Royal Alliance Associates Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. Royal Alliance Associates Incorporated, separately owned other entities and or marketing names, product services here, referenced here, are independent of Royal Alliance Associates Incorporated. I was reminded that I got a really nice email today from somebody who bought a song from Matt Farley.
Yeah, yeah.
The second one he's bought.
Yeah, did you listen to it?
I did not listen to it.
That's pretty good.
Let me go up and get my coffee, but I just wanted to mention that every time Matt does this, the people rave about the job he does. They give him all the information about somebody in the family, and Matt churns something out for, is he still doing that for $65? It's some insanely low amount.
I believe his price has gone up.
Oh, really?
I think it's $95. I don't know if it ever
fell. Well, it never should have been $65.
No.
I think it was $44 at one time.
Yeah, it started out at $44.
Yeah, so he reels you in, and then he nails you.
Where's our 10%?
But anyway, I just wanted to mention that Matt is available to do this stuff. Because people that he does it for just love it. What's the best way to reach him?
His website. I mean, you can just search Matt Farley, and it pretty much pops up. But is it Moturn Media?
Yeah, Moturn Media.
And he just wants
Moturn Media. He's got his phone number. He's got his email address.
He docked
all his social media right there on the main page. You can reach him.
He docked himself and put it all up there. Yeah. But Dave sent an email and said that he just got his second Matt Farley song over the weekend for his son's birthday. It was a big hit. Just like when he got one for his other son. He said, Matt does a really good job taking all the facts you give him and crafting him in a song. And he was able to do this one in short notice. My boy, for reasons I don't quite understand, has an affinity for the Czech Republic. Maybe he's Maybe he's a big Nikita Denise fan. She's from Czech Republic. So Matt said, Matt would get bonus points if he could rhyme something with Czech Republic. Should we play it?
Does Drew want to hear it, though?
I'm from Czech Republic.
I can play it for Drew later. So
okay.
I think his son.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I don't want to mention everyone's. Great. I don't want to mention the people's names. I don't want them to get doxxed.
Did you like it?
Let's see. Is it playing?
I love that.
It's better with Nikita.
Oh my gosh, his name is Josh. He looks like he comes from Germany in his flip flops with his black socks that come right up to his knees. But he's not a German, and in all of Europe, Germany is far from his favorite subject. He's much more smitten with Great Britain and the Czech Republic. He's got a flight tracker telling him what's happening over the house. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are like the only food that go into his mouth, along with Mackles, bite-sized pretzels, and sour cream and onion chips.
Like,
who could want any more than this? Oh, Josh is so cool. He throws the ball into the pool. And then Hank the dog dives in to retrieve it. He gets it every time, you wouldn't believe it. And sometimes Hank has been known to drag Josh on a leash right through the grass. Josh can handle it, he's a tough kid. He has survived a broken wrist. Josh can assemble Legos all by himself. Josh has been alive since this day in 2012. It's his birthday. Yes, yes, yes. And I'm here to say Josh is the best.
Wow. Well, happy birthday.
I will spank my butt a little bit. Yes.
I wonder if Matt would do songs like about Nikita Denise if we paid him to do them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, because he's very clean. He doesn't really...
What is he going to rhyme butthole a little bit with?
I will spank my butthole a little bit.
And she doesn't give a shit. She'll spank her butthole.
I can tell this is going to be fun.
A little bit. Great.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking for a lot of stupid things just to distract us from the real news. And the dumbest one might be that Cardi B has... fixed her peacock tattoo. And I don't know how many people out there know that Cardi B has a peacock tattoo. But
why did it need to be fixed?
Because it just needed... She got it 10 years ago and it's colored in now.
Oh, wow.
It is the biggest tattoo I think I've ever seen. Partially because she's got a nice...
Oh, is that
ass.
The one that wraps like from her butt all the way up to her back?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I want to show Drew because I think he'll just think it's a green blob, but there's a lot of color to it. So that's how... bad it is right now that I'm looking for news stories about Cardi B's.
Well, there's the George Washington what did he use story that is in Brandon's prep.
There's a story about George Washington?
Yeah.
I specifically
but George
put it in
Washington
there because...
didn't do shit. He can suck my fucking dick. I fucking hate that faggot.
What's the story about G Dubs?
There's actually quite a few.
He got vandalized. The statue got vandalized.
Yeah.
In a couple of cities.
Because he was a major slaveholder. Although defenders of him will say, he was gifted those slaves. I was
and
laughing.
He freed them at the end.
I was telling Brandon, he's like the, he's like, remember when Aerosmith got sober and no one was allowed to drink anymore?
Yeah.
Washington basically said, hey, you guys can be free when I die. So it was once he died, he freed them all, which shouldn't they have just murdered him earlier and then they'd be free, right?
Oh, yeah, that would have been a good plan.
I'm the president. I'm hitting that ass.
I assume they didn't know that...
he probably...
That, you know, if he died, they'd be freed. But then I wondered, like...
He probably re-gifted them when he died.
No, he
else.
Set them free, which that made me think, is did he have a really racist, like, son who was like, wait, man, those are supposed to be my slaves.
Yeah, but in a certain time period, you could not be freed in certain states. So
seriously, I thought. I mean, if it's property, why can't? I mean, that's how they were treated. Why couldn't he free?
There are some places where they couldn't. You couldn't be free because they couldn't just have people roaming around. Was their thought if they were white plantation owners?
Well, Virginia, they could just walk up to Maryland.
I saw a ton of different statue news. I mean, there was the George Washington statue, which was defaced. It was spray painted all over that it was a slave owner.
Oh, no.
There was also the statue of the very first KKK Grandmaster. I didn't know that one stands.
Why did he have a statue? He was
also, apparently, a really big
Is that Nathaniel Bedford
general.
Forrest? Is that who it was?
Pardon me?
Is it Nathaniel Bedford Forrest?
Oh, yeah, I think it's like the
you know how I know that, right?
Inspiration for Forrest Gump's father or grandfather or something like that.
Well, that's in the movie Forrest Gump. He was named after Nathaniel Bedford Forrest.
And I think they want to replace that statue in Tennessee with one of Dolly Parton, which I
cool.
would be all
Why not?
For. Somebody's going to have to make a bust of her bust. And then,
that'd be an easy one to topple if
statue.
We ever find
Robert
out.
Robert E. Lee. They
What'd Bob they Lee do?
They made it an LGBTQ... type of memorial at his statue.
Bob Lee would have been outraged.
They should replace it with a Bob Lee from ESPN statue. No,
remember
nothing,
when this
nothing.
Happened last time when they were assaulting statues? Well, everybody was mad about statues, and somebody came up with the idea of throwing those rubber penises at them.
People are so angry about statues. I don't really care.
And then
I don't
Mount
care if they're
Rushmore
up. I don't care
is
if they go down.
Somewhat scrutiny because they have George Washington up on there too. So I mean, what are we going to do? Well, blow up the mountain?
Oh yeah.
Why not?
Let's do it.
They never finished it anyway. Get rid of it.
They finished it.
It's supposed to be their whole bodies. They never finished it.
Let's blow up Mount Rushmore and the bit on radio about what is your Mount Rushmore of rock and roll.
Yeah. What's the Mount Rushmore of Mount Rushmores? Well, I guess it would be Mount Rushmore. No, but they do it for everything. It's the weakest subject.
I know, but what do you mean by it's not finished?
Weren't they supposed to do the whole bodies?
I didn't know that. I mean, that I know that there's the four presidents. I know that I think Trump probably is looking into some of the limestones to see if there's enough room for him.
He should put his head on there. People would go ape shit.
But you can't blow up that mountain. I mean, then again, they did in Team America World Police. They blew that mountain up, if you can recall.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over them mountains?
Mount Rushmore is one of those things that's like, yeah, it'd be kind of neat to see. And then you realize where it is and how far out of the way from everything it is. And then you go, I don't really need to see it. I've seen a picture.
Yeah, I want to see it still.
Do you really?
Well, yeah, I've never been west. It sucks, to tell you the truth.
But there's so many better things.
I've never been as far west as like some portion of the UP. I've never been to Chicago.
Wait.
I've never been to California.
What?
I want to see the Grand Canyon so freaking bad.
Wait a sec.
Really?
You've never been to Chicago?
No, I've never been to Chicago.
He
always goes up north.
Blows my mind.
South and east.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
Never been to Vegas.
What?
No, I mean, that would have been west of Chicago if I had. But I think
Well, no, I know that, but I'm just wondering if you forgot about it.
That just blows my
mind.
I've never been to Vegas.
Trudy, aren't you surprised by that?
I am.
I'm really shocked.
So what is
I've done a lot of traveling, but like I said, it's always been, I want to say like.
To where?
Mexico?
I want to say Iron Mountain is like the far, or Iron Mountain, Michigan in the UP is the farthest west I've ever been in my life.
Oh my God.
And east? Have you been east?
Oh, yeah. I've been all over the East Coast. I've been all over the Caribbean. You know what? Maybe Mexico. Maybe I was pretty far west in Mexico, but who knows?
Yeah, no one knows where Mexico is.
But then again, I think Cancun lines up with Chicago. So maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. Why have you never been to Chicago? That one seems like an easy one. Like for a ball game
or
something?
To walk around it? I mean, I didn't have any.
I don't know.
I've been there a million times for work. But
Wrigley Field?
I know. I would love to. That's one of my bucket list things. I want to catch a game at Wrigley. I want to catch a game at Fenway.
Fenway's overrated. I feel like.
Not if you sit on the Green Monster. I'm going to pony up for the Green Monster.
I think Wrigley's overrated. Don't let Drew know I said.
Oh, yeah.
I think Wrigley's overrated. I don't know. It's cool that it's in a neighborhood. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But it's not the most comfortable.
I thought that was cool.
Not the best sight lines.
It's the history of it.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I don't have a problem.
Hey, Doug, it's Drew. Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday.
Oh, I got the wrong one.
Hey, Doug, it's Drew.
Just wanted to lay this down in message form, requesting a day off next Friday.
I'm going
to
the World Series Thursday night.
Yeah, so.
So, who
else? Also in your prep is Jim Nance's powerful tribute to George Floyd. What was that all about, Brandon? I didn't.
Well, PGA Tour came back this weekend. And
oh, right.
Obviously.
And NASCAR.
NASCAR's been running for a couple weeks now, but they needed to make some kind of a statement, I guess. Everybody has to make some form of a statement, because if you don't, then you get in a lot of trouble, to tell you the truth. There's a lot of companies and people who've been slammed for not speaking out.
That's going to solve inequity in this country, are corporations making statements.
Oh, gosh. There's every single one of them has put out some form of, whether it's a tweet or a statement. And there's been people collecting them, just making sure, hey, by the way, so you know, Chipotle is not racist. So
they're just cultural appropriators.
But it's the PGA Tour. They're coming back now. So Jim Nance, who starts everything with, hello, friends, he got right into, I think a 2 or 3 minute tribute on on George Floyd and what sports mean as a distraction to everybody.
No one is more a man of the people than Jim Nance. That's ludicrous. That's kind of a no-win situation for him, then, because I don't think the audience of golf probably cares that much.
Well,
but I guess he has to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was fine. They, I think it was well received, but you got to understand if he didn't say anything, it would be even worse.
Well, Howard broke his silence on, because he's back today, about the whole N-word blackface sketch that kind of went viral thanks to Donald Trump Jr. And, right. You know, Howard pretty much said what I guess everyone expected him to say. Like, that was then. I'm appalled at some of the stuff I've done. He said, am I a bad guy? I don't think so. Donald Trump didn't think so. And then he really turns kind of the tables on Junior, Donald Trump Jr., for tweeting it out.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's kind of a diversion, if you ask me. It's just, what does that really have to do with it? I mean, it's been out there before. You know, Brandon, we've talked about it before off the air that it was out there. But I guess does he get credit now for coming out and saying it? But
I think he does in a way, because if you look today, the headlines are just basically saying that he has addressed it, that he has responded over the controversy. And normally when something like this happens and it isn't received well, people will keep pounding you no matter what. And I don't think they're pounding him right now. Howard Stern
has always had
a good way of kind of moving past some of the controversy.
And I've heard him be contrite and deliver that speech before about other things. And he is genuine. It sounds as though he really feels it, that he does admit. That's the great first step that he takes. And yeah.
Drew's big problem with it, though, is that the Twitter mob hasn't been out there attacking him. You know, the usual suspects, the Alyssa Milanos, the Chrissy Teigens. I don't know who else leads the Pitchfork Brigade on.
Yeah,
Twitter.
No, you're right. And it's actually kind of funny. It's funny you mentioned Chrissy Teigen. I know this is a little bit of a sidetrack because, she hasn't come out and slammed him or anything like that. Like she would normally come out with other individuals, including Donald Trump.
On her show.
Well, maybe, but that's pretty transparent. I just wondered if they attacked Fallon too, because, you know, do they want to be on the Tonight Show? What were you going to say, though, about Teigen?
One of our listeners sent along the final couple minutes of the roast of Donald Trump on Comedy Central that happened a few years back. Yeah. And, you know, since then, we've heard of all the crazy demands that he made. You know, don't talk about my
money,
my wealth or my daughter or something like that. And I watched it, and it was kind of funny just seeing some of the audience just going nuts over Donald Trump and his delivery and some of his jokes and stuff like that. And I never knew this because I didn't know Chrissy Teigen existed around then. But Donald Trump goes ahead and he makes that joke about, I think it was the raccoon joke, where, like, what's the difference between Donald Trump's hair and a wet raccoon? And then he ends it with this.
A wet raccoon doesn't have $7 billion fucking dollars in the bank.
But while he delivered that, the first person to stand up and give a roaring standing ovation is Chrissy Teigen.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I just thought it was something else.
It's interesting. I mean, I guess he wasn't president then, so that's probably where ire comes from.
But his entire, I didn't realize this when I watched the Comedy Central roast of Donald Trump, but his entire rebuttal of the dais is basically a campaign speech. I really didn't give two thoughts about it then because I figured he's just, he's just joking around. No one's ever going to vote for Donald Trump. But sure enough, years later, he becomes president of the United States.
When was that? What year was that?
The roast, let's check, of Donald Trump was...
But he didn't have $7 billion either.
2011.
2011.
So that was a full 5 years before he ran.
So that's interesting because that's right around the birther movement that he pushed forward. So that would be, I would think that's where the hypocrisy really steps in, if he was pushing that and then they're all buddy-buddy with him. But, it's not like they knew he would be president and disagree with his policies.
It just goes to show you that, Snoop Dogg was on that dais and he loved him and now he hates him.
Sure. I mean, his name has been in a lot of rap songs. They did like him until he became a politician. So then once again, is it the player or is it the game?
It's the game.
I kind of think it is too, except it's a game he's all too willing to play. So,
well, the latest is he's losing by 14 points in the polls to Joe Biden. So.
Sleepy Joe. Hey, by the way, there's been a Hunter sighting. Did you guys see the Hunter Biden sighting?
Yeah.
Where Where's Hunter?
Welcome back, man.
Thank you.
It was a long dump. He's been spotted on a hike with his wife and the newest baby, not the one that's like 2 months older than this one.
Wait, not the stripper's baby?
No, his actual wife's baby.
Well, he's a great father.
He appeared to be a hands-on father, helping his wife load their son into a chest carrier. And that made news, so at least we know where he is. When was that other baby born? They're basically twins, those two kids.
They're close in age, yeah.
Yeah. That's gonna be an awkward Thanksgiving.
Why didn't he take both babies on the hike?
Yeah. Well, because that other one doesn't exist.
Yeah,
no
it
one's
does.
Seen that baby. Shouldn't that lady be out there like parading that baby around? I don't think a mom would want to do that, but I'm surprised someone's not parading that baby. Well,
is he have primary custody or
No, he doesn't want any. That's the thing.
What?
Speaking of celebrity offsprings, did you see the story about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's son?
Nice guy.
That is the weirdest story, though. It was that he stabbed the neighbor over a garbage can.
Yeah, I know.
And because the guy said something about the old lady that he lived with, which I didn't understand what that was. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It started over a confrontation of trash cans. It's been an ongoing issue, which nice both being adults and not resolving the issue of your
Is there an adult in the entire country right now? I don't think so.
Well, you would think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar comes across as pretty level-headed and smart. You would think some of that would have gone to his kid. I sort of got on because the lady who takes care of him is 83 years old. He doesn't do anything for her, and it just bums me out. She's in a walker taking her trash cans down. So he's basically mad that Kareem's kid won't help out this 83-year-old who is taking care of him.
Kareem!
So the Abdul-Jabbar went into the house, came out, and said, I'm going to stick you with this knife. He had the knife in his mouth. And then the guy turned around, walked away, and thought he was punched. And it turns out that Kareem's kid just started stabbing him.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with people these days. I really don't.
Well, there was another stabbing. Let's see. Wasn't it Michael Jackson's niece?
Oh, yeah. And you had the best series, Scissor Shell. I thought the same thing.
The girl who, for some reason, during one of these protests, it was actually written as, I think, Joe Jackson's granddaughter, which would be Michael Jackson's niece. But there's some video of somebody being taken away by police officers being arrested following a stabbing. I don't know why that person stabbed Michael Jackson's niece, but the girl who did the stabbing, oh boy. I think she was hiding a massive blade underneath one of those two massive melons on her chest because she was stacked.
She had a nice body.
Let me see this person.
Yo, you didn't see it? No. Hang on. All right, I got to find it.
I saw the story.
Michael Jackson.
So is this Marlon's child or Tito's child?
No one cares.
Randy's child? I want
to
know.
It's only a story because she's related to Jackson's. It's Michael Jackson's half-niece.
You know, they said she would. Oh.
What does that mean?
I don't know what that means.
I'm pulling it up right now. You got to see this.
Did she stab Michael Jackson's half-niece 7 times?
Yeah, 7 times. I think 4 of the 7 were with her nipples, and the other 3 were with a blade or something like that. Her name is Angela Bonnell.
And how badly injured is Michael Jackson's half-niece?
She has gashes on her face and...
Oh, my God. Because I saw a picture of her. Didn't they have a picture of her where she was sitting there waiting for assistance or something, waiting for help?
Yeah,
well, there's her face. There's a picture of her face.
I can't get this.
I mean, that's legit. Pretty nasty. She has 45,000 followers on Instagram.
I can't tell what's going on in her face there. Is that blood dripping down her face or is that a slice?
That's stitches. From basically her temple and down to her cheek. And that's a slice under her ear.
I couldn't see the stitches. It looked like a scab.
Yeah. No, that's all stitched up. Here's the girl that's stabbed. But that's not a body shot. Where's the body shot?
Here it is. Check out my computer.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
Up there, Drew. Up there.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yikes.
So what was the lead story? That she stabbed Michael Jackson's half-niece seven times?
Show me
that
big old titties. Come
on. She has a gigundous rack.
Tits. Yeah. Well, we know what it should be.
Or that she apparently shrank all of her clothing and wore it anyway.
Yeah, she does seem to be wearing a size small. Her shorts are pretty tight, too.
Oh, here's another shot from Yasmin Jackson's Instagram where she's pretty beat up. She's pretty bloody.
But she's going to be okay.
I think so.
Yeah, because she took photos of herself and posted them.
You know, isn't it amazing how many stories there are about... The reason I asked if her rack was the lead story was because frequently the rack is a lead story. Like, Emily Ratajkowski shows off underboob at event in... And I'm like, is that really a story?
Well, while you were
gone... Yes, it is a story. It gets clicks.
While you were gone, and I've since taken it down, but Cardi B got her tattoo filled in. It looks wonderful. You would love it.
Oh, the one in her butt?
Yeah, the peacock.
Great. Good for her.
But that was a big story because I was just looking for anything that's not COVID or protest related. So it's few and far between.
Oh, yeah. I know. I went upstairs just to refill my coffee and take a minute, and I start watching TMZ again. What a mistake.
Why?
Just because it was on. It was paused, and so I turned it back on.
The show is so bad.
You know, I'm really... just amazed at the media in general. I just find amazing
it's
on a
not
daily
the
basis.
Media, though.
Well, they're not the media. Well, they're part of the media. They're not really the media, but the media amazes me too. And I defended the media for a long time.
Well, it all gets lumped together. That's the problem.
Well, I'm only talking about. We'll just leave TMZ. Drop them. Although what they did today was pretty amazing and not that unusual either. They were covering a car that was driving through a protest, and the car looked like somebody trying to stir up shit, and he slows down as the crowd gets around him, and then he speeds up, and this guy is on the hood of the car, and I think they broke, then the guy flew off.
Yeah, I think that guy was fine, but the other guy looked like he was pretty mangled or needed attention.
Well, somebody should have or could have easily been hurt.
Yeah,
and it was, and then the guy, I think he turned around and came down another road.
Well,
same
cool.
guy,
Great.
Nice guy, and then the next one that they said ran over the crowd was a car that looked to me like it was actually trying to get through and picked the wrong road, because they didn't speed up. They slowed down and people surrounded the car and they were trying to like inch through and somebody broke a window and people are kicking the car. And, you know, I don't, unless there was something that happened before that, I don't really know. I think they just were the wrong car at the wrong time in the wrong place. But, the commentary on that show is, you know, they opened up today with Rayshard Brooks, and Harvey said what so many people said, which was that a man was killed over falling asleep in his car, and then proceeds to go on to say that, you know, why didn't they let him walk home, or why didn't they let him take an Uber, and I don't think... Do cops, how often are cops letting people out of DUIs? I mean, that's, remember all how DUI is the worst thing in the world?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not, I mean, and this is, this is.
It's a separate issue, but wouldn't that be a better way of dealing with things if just on the person?
Well, versus the guy getting shot? Yeah,
no,
of
I just
course.
I mean in general.
But to criticize the police for not calling him an
safe.
Uber or.
Oh, no, it's stupid.
It's ridiculous. No. We actually. Are incredibly judgmental about people that get a DUI. People get a DUI and they can get thrown off shows. They can get thrown out of anything. You lose your job. You about to lose your job. And to say that they could let them walk home, or they since when do we encourage cops to let people out of DUIs?
I don't know.
When the world's on fire.
I was pulled over once and went through all the touching your nose things and.
Yeah,
could have been you.
And he told, it could have been.
I've
me,
had many
he told
moments
me.
Where I was pulled over at like 2 a.m. and I happened to be like the designated driver, and they still make me go through all of the all of the.
Well, I had a blow tests. On the breathalyzer. I have no idea what it came up. He just went, pull your car in there, call a cab, and let the cab. And I don't want to see you driving around.
Well, don't compare your privilege to.
I was incredibly privileged. So what I did.
Rayshard Brooks.
I pulled over. I saw the cab come.
By the way,
I
you know,
just fell
not,
asleep in my car and then drove home.
Well, let's not forget that the police Oops. Were called.
Ooh. I know. But I think
if
this
it was
really
no big deal. Why didn't Wendy's go out and tell it? Can we blame Wendy's for this? Why didn't they go out and tell the guy to pull his car in a parking space and just crash?
It must have been crashed Darren McFadden style. But doesn't this really
No, I don't think he was moving at all. The car was just dead, and people were driving around it to get to the drive-thru. So Wendy's was pissed, and they called the police.
I'd like the bigger question to be asked, like, how are we supposed to deal with these things going forward? I mean, if we just want people arrested and tried and ticketed,
fine. To act like DUI is a parking ticket is kind of ridiculous.
You know, it's pretty dangerous, but what did he blow? You know, I mean, there's a lot of questions here. I'm just saying, aside from
was, over I think he blew too, a point one, point if 106 or 1.0, no, 0.16 or 0.106 maybe.
But if there's talk about, you know, redoing things and letting them get to.
Well, then tell the cops before they go there not to give them a DUI. But the cops do what the cops
right
are
now.
Trained to do.
That's what I mean, yeah. But I'm looking at the bigger pictures. How do you want to treat it going forward?
DUI?
Yeah.
that's a pretty loaded question. I didn't know that we were going to just decide we don't care about DUIs.
I didn't say we don't care about them.
Tell that to anybody who's lost somebody because of a drunk
driver. That's not what I'm saying. Never mind. Forget it.
I just don't think DUI is something that people really want to lighten up on. I mean,
okay, never mind.
But to say that they shot him for falling asleep is ridiculous. That's not, and that's not to say that he should have been shot or I want him to be shot. He was shot because, in my opinion, is poorly trained police. They think that the most marginal threat is a threat. And in fact, as far as taser guns, because I, you know, when I first saw that, and we've watched how many of these take place? A dozen? I mean, big, high-profile cases. You know, and I keep going back to the guy with the rake. Well, a rake is not a mortal weapon. You're not going to kill someone with a rake.
You could.
You could, yeah. Well, you can kill someone with a stun gun or with a taser, too.
Well, that goes to the whole point of how do you want to deal with it going forward? What is considered a threat?
I think...
What is the most important things they should be working on? I don't know.
I thought last week when I watched, you know, I don't know how many episodes of Cops in the last month or so, but, I mean, I virtually had them on. It was like a rolling Cops. And honest to God, the day I was writing down my Copservations, the first one I wrote down was... Stop chasing people on foot. If we're not going to chase them with a car, you know, what's the difference with a foot? The only difference is you end up tackling them and you have another brawl after you've already had a brawl.
Yeah.
And you've got the radio. I mean, the point of the car chase was, and by the way, I remember when people were first saying, those damn police chasing a guy and the guy hit somebody and people rarely would blame the person who the police were chasing. They would blame the police for chasing them. And then it took, I mean, seemingly forever to change that policy, but they did. And
they chase people with the choppers now, and that actually is effective.
Yeah, it is, except the people are driving around and around and around. I mean, if you watched, I watched the chase in L.A. about 3 weeks ago. This guy was driving at ridiculous speeds. He got into three accidents. I don't think anybody was hurt, though. And then eventually he pulled over because he had rims. He was going about 20 miles an hour, but I mean, he drove and drove and drove and drove. But the point is with a car that is being chased or is being pulled over and refuses to be pulled over, the radio wins every time. You're not going to win. There's no way you're getting away in a car. It ain't happening.
Yeah.
And I would assume with the radio, somebody on foot is probably not getting away either. I think it happens, but it's probably pretty rare. But in terms of what happened in Atlanta, that looks like a lot of police shootings I've seen. And I've seen police shootings, too. We had a couple of years ago where the car was driving and the guy wouldn't stop. And it's like, well, he could have run over the cop. And it was like, well, I don't know if he could run over the cop or not, but you know, in the absence or in the event of doubt, it seemed that we always side with the police.
Well, yeah.
Because they're the police.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it just seems that now, you know, not only are people suggesting that a DUI is no big deal and you should just let him go, but also that tasers aren't a big deal because, you know, this morning when I was listening to the conversation about it, I was thinking about tasers, like tasers are kind of a big deal. In fact, I thought I remembered people killing people with tasers because they had a
Don't
heart attack.
Don't tase me, bro. Don't tase me.
They had a heart attack or something. And so I went online, and there's a story about 8 people, and they're not all adults, too. Some of them were teenagers that were killed by tasers. Mm. So, you know, therein lies the, well, he could have died from the taser, or, you know, he could have tased him, and then he goes and gets his gun. I mean, there's always that side that we're so used to hearing, and when you could even remotely justify, people always would, and they wouldn't convict the cops, and often they wouldn't even charge him. This guy's charged before they ever even, I mean, there's nothing done at all. He was charged hours after it happened. Or not charged, he was fired. Has he been charged?
I don't think he's been charged. If he has, I don't know.
No, I just see that he's been fired so far. I've seen that they're calling it lawful but awful.
Well, lawful but awful, make it not lawful. What the fuck? I mean, honestly, isn't that that's distressing as hell to me because it's like either you can do it or you can't. But if you can't live with people being shot and killed in lethal force, then don't fucking have it. Or tell people that.
Isn't that the point of all the protests?
Yeah, but we've been protesting. This has been, people have been talking about this forever.
Yeah.
And honestly, people have been protesting for 3 weeks now. And has anything been done?
No.
What's taking so long? People are out there every night. Why is it taking so long to do anything? I mean, I know they talked about the chokehold.
Well, they've each...
Why don't they talk about chasing people? We just had a guy shot Saturday or Friday night at Wendy's. So, what's... All this business of, well, we'll have to have a conference, and we'll do this, and we'll do that, and then we'll try to decide. It's like, no, we're done waiting for you, for this bullshit. We're done waiting for our leadership to do anything. Do something productive. It's not that fucking hard. Everybody saw that incident. Everyone has seen, I mean, virtually the entire country has seen multiple cases, or read about them, or seen protests about them. And the bottom line is, there is too much slack, I think the feeling is, there's too much slack in terms of a lethal threat. So if that's the case, instead of saying lawful is awful, or, you know, well, he can kill him, but he shouldn't have.
How are you going to define lethal threat?
How do they define it now?
I don't know.
Well, it's not, you know, everybody thinks it's so easy. You know, let the guy walk home. He's drunk and he can walk home. Take his keys. You know, and it seems that the compliance part, you know, and the fact that he gets in a fight with 2 cops, well, I think that sort of ups his threat level the minute you're fighting with police.
Of course it does. Yeah.
But I saw something really interesting, and someone sent this to me today. Because this is something that you won't see, and this is something that you won't hear about. Because nobody wants to hear it. Let me find it. Oh, no.
What happens to Wendy's in the wake of all of this?
Well, that one got burnt down.
Well, I know that, but does this affect the franchise?
Are they going to rebuild it?
That's the thing. It's probably a franchisee store.
Well, you being a knowledgeable person.
White girl set it on fire!
Hardly. Well, a white girl was trying to set it on fire, even though it was set on fire. So we don't know if she set that original fire.
I thought that headline was
more
weird.
Stuff that we don't.
You know, watch white girl set Wendy's on fire. Like, wow, you know, is the race of the girl setting Wendy's on fire? Is that? I mean, do we care
it seems
about
to me
that?
Like you're the expert, Mark.
Well, I think, I think people do care because they're afraid that it's just going to be blamed on black people.
And the relevance is that there have been white people amidst some of these causing trouble to try to foment some different kind of rebellion.
So if a black person sets the next Wendy's on fire, will they not tell us that? Or will they tell us that a black person set them? I mean, what is, it's just really weird. I find the whole thing odd.
I don't know. I mean, I heard you talking about it yesterday and what the difference is. And I think the difference is that you have, it's like back in the 60s, you got the man and the people fighting against the man. And there's a certain, you know, like, yeah, extra, there, you know, there's the rebellious impulse of Americans maybe is supported by the people fighting against the man.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there's a million reasons to fight the man. There always are a million reasons to fight the man. I mean, very few people just like the man. But unfortunately, you know, now, the police remind me of Vietnam vets coming home in 1972 or 1971, which was terrible.
Yeah, they were treated.
Yeah, they were treated terribly. They were assholes. They were spit upon. They were, you know, they were harassed. Yeah. And now police are like the Vietnam vets of 2020. They're all bastards, ACAB.
That's funny because I talked to Marcus about that, my neighbor who was kind of in the tail end of Vietnam. And, you know, after serving, you know, a tour in which he went across seas, he, you know, served his country. He finally came back to like Seattle, Washington. That's where they flew him in. And then from there, he was going to get a plane ticket that was provided by the military back to Michigan. And within 2 hours of coming back from Vietnam, you know, from overseas, boom, he's arrested for drinking on the streets. Cause you know, he'd been away from the U.S. for so long. All he wanted to do was have, you know, U.S. alcohol, you know, so. Within 2 hours, he was arrested. They put him in jail. He missed his flight, so he had to pay for his own to get home. And it's crazy because these days, you know, we see our, all of our, you know, military, and they get standing ovations at stadiums. But with Vietnam, that didn't happen.
You know, military. When all the talk about defunding the police came up, I thought, I'm really almost incredulous that there isn't more conversation about taking military money and devoting it to something else. We spend so much. Well, the gripe is that look how much money, when you take a local budget, look how much goes to the police. And normally I think people go, well, the police, fuck, the police are important. We love the police. But no, we don't love the police. They're all bastards. They're not helping. We'd be better off having no police, according to Ilhan Omar. And, you know, look at Chaz or Chop. In Seattle, they have no police, and look how well it's going. Well, they do have people walking around with guns. And I mean, I don't know if I like that idea either.
They built walls, too.
Mm-hmm.
To answer your question, though, like, why is it taking so long? There's a big article in the news about from the Michigan perspective. And inside of it, it has, you know, kind of the proposal. There's still Republicans are crafting their own proposal for the House and the Senate. Still waiting to see what's going to be in that. But the Democrats want to have restrictions on no-knock warrants, eliminating arrest quotas,
well, this
requiring body cams, curbing liability for protections for police officers, which actually came from Justin Amash, you know, the former Republican.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of his bill. But they want to get rid of qualified immunity for government officials. They also want to limit the transfer of surplus military equipment to state and local law enforcement, which they had done, and then it got reversed under the current administration. It's been rolled back. So, I, you know, it's just, I mean, well, Congress just moves so fucking,
but we have to wait.
Slow.
We have to wait for them to trade this for that, this for that.
Sure.
Well, how about doing what's right? How about doing what most people want? Because honestly, I think when
what do most people want, though?
I think most people want police not to put their knee on someone's neck for an extended period of time, or maybe not to put their knee on their neck at all.
But they're not supposed to. They're not supposed to once they're cuffed.
Well, chokeholds has been discussed. How long can it take to discuss a chokehold?
Well,
honestly,
how long
can it take?
I think it just has to be it's all part of one big bill.
Why don't we? I know, but when you make it one big bill, it gets watered down, and I give you this, and you take that, and you give me that, and I'll give up this. And does that really work?
Oh, government.
Because
works.
It sure isn't working.
Well.
Maybe they should have 8 minutes and 36 seconds to come up with a solution.
I like that idea. I have a feeling they would come up with something. They would agree on some. Well, no, maybe
they
not.
Wouldn't.
I don't know.
They absolutely wouldn't.
It's 5 years since Ferguson burned down.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10 years since many, many other things. I don't know. Honestly, I just don't know how we got here.
It's been 53 years since a lot of the riots in the late 60s.
Well,
67, 68.
But that's a different group of people entirely. I mean, that's that's a whole different issue. And this issue, I don't even know. Honestly, I haven't even seen many polls on this or on the Atlanta shooting. I'd be interested to see what people think. I did read a lot of comments. And it's funny when people are just commenting. There's the ones who want to be funny. There's the ones who want to be outrageous. And then you notice there's a lot of them that are in the middle or in between. And I find that there's a lot of agreement among people. And this is what I hate about these subjects in general is I think there's a lot of people who honestly really, really hated what happened to George Floyd and really could agree on a lot of things. And I think we agree with each other more than we disagree, but all we hear from is the far left and the far right and the media and social media. And it just mucks everything up. But play the video of this. It's of Reverend
use of force here in the Valley.
Reverend Moffitt.
But he gets some on-the-job training about use of force tonight.
Pause it for a second. Stuff.
Reverend Jarrett Moffitt.
Okay, this guy was protesting a shooting in Phoenix. He was leading protests. And he was the voice of this person who lost their life. And I don't even know what the case is. I think there's, like most cities, there's a couple cases that people are really upset about. And the police invited him to take a, I think it's critical thinking or, something along those lines or de-escalation or something like that. And he takes the course and his conclusion is actually, I like the conclusion he came to because I totally agree with him, but it's something that I don't think I've heard anyone talking about, but go
protests
ahead.
Protests and marches after Phoenix police shot and killed an unarmed man. Well, tonight he gets a chance to experience the split second decisions that police have to make when encountering a suspect.
And our Troy Hayden was right along with him tonight getting the training as well. This must have been eye-opening.
It was. It was a really interesting experience. We've all watched those protests all over the country after police officers are accused of shooting people who aren't armed. But what would happen if one of those protesters felt what it was like to wear a badge and then be put in a life or death situation himself?
So I'm going to have you put the holster on right inside your belt loop there.
Jarrett Maupin gets his weapon. You might recognize him as a high-profile organizer in the minority community. Just last month, he led marches on Phoenix Police Headquarters after an officer shot an unarmed man.
We want his badge! We want his gun! We want his job!
Today, he accepted an invitation to look at things from the other side, agreeing to go through a force-on-force training session with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. Three scenarios where you have to decide to shoot or not shoot. Scenario one is a call about a man casing cars in a parking lot.
Shoot
him! Maupin approaches the man and starts asking questions.
What?
Where have your hand in your gun? You're looking for your vehicle. What kind of car do you drive?
Where have your hand in your gun?
What kind of car do you drive?
It's my car, man.
Oh, he's dead.
Maupin, the officer, is shot. It happens that fast.
The Reverend's dead.
At what time did you think that it was time for you to address the use of force that was given?
When he came to the back of the vehicle. Okay. And was hiding. I could sense something was wrong.
Scenario two, a call of two men fighting.
Is it a little weird? I mean, not that they had time for the piece, but it's a little weird that they just threw him into these scenarios with no instruction or training.
No, they said they did give him some instruction and training.
What's going on today, gentlemen?
Huh? What's wrong with you?
Shoot him!
What's going on today, gentlemen?
What do you want?
What's happening here?
Shoot him!
Back
you?
Up.
Huh? Oh.
Again.
What are you doing, man? Hey!
Hey, he shouldn't approach me.
He shot the guy.
Yeah. What are you doing?
He's coming at him.
You just shot him?
He's a big guy, too.
Hey, he rushed me.
Tell me why you shot.
Well, I've shot because he was within that zone. I felt there was an imminent threat. I didn't necessarily see him armed, but he came clearly to do some harm to the officer, to my person. It's hard to make that call. It shakes you up.
Again, an unarmed man was shot. Scenario three, a call about a possible burglar walking down the street. Maupin gets him on the ground. He's not complying.
I need you to keep your hands up, sir.
For what?
Because I need to check that waistband.
I love the guys playing the bad guy.
What are you doing?
Because I don't know what you have under there.
Everybody, look at this guy. What are you doing?
No shots fired, but the suspect did have a hidden knife in his waistband. I went through the scenarios too, without seeing what Maupin did.
Well, do you have keys or do you have anything to show me that?
Don't worry about it.
No, I need to talk to you. Come on out over here.
Oh, freeze!
Well,
Porter's dead.
Maricopa County Sheriffs, get on the ground. Get on the ground. Both of you, get on the ground.
What do you want?
Get on the ground.
For what?
Get back.
What
get back.
Same results for both of us.
They did a lot of shooting.
Very fast out here. I asked Maupin what his biggest takeaway from this exercise will be.
I didn't understand how important compliance was, but after going through this, yeah, my attitude has changed. This is all unfolding in 10 to 15 seconds. People need to comply with the orders of law enforcement officers for their own sake.
Thanks to the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office for taking us through that today. It was an eye-opener.
That's a tremendous admission that Reverend Maupin just made.
Right.
That you need to comply for your own safety.
Right, and he saw it. I mean, he plainly shot a man who was not armed but was coming at him, and he felt, you know, that he was unsafe at that point, that he was coming after him, and he fired.
Yeah, and I don't think any officer goes into work thinking, I'm going to shoot and kill somebody today. But these interesting, you know, things happen, like the guy coming from behind the SUV. Boom, and you're done.
And you are.
How did you feel about those scenarios when you were going through them?
It's interesting that the reverend says that, because compliance would remove, if people complied, there's a number of these incidents that would not occur. But have I heard anyone talking about compliance? Honestly, I haven't. In fact, I felt bad bringing it up, because it's like, well, you know, am I blaming the guy? No, I'm not blaming the guy that got shot and killed. I'm saying if there's compliance, then it doesn't get to that escalated level. And compliance is a big part of all these things. And if the goal is ultimately to save people, then why not emphasize compliance?
Okay. I feel like
you disagree.
I
mean,
feel like we hear that a lot.
No, yeah, who has said compliance? I haven't heard anyone talking about compliance. I really haven't. I hear that
ahead,
they shot a guy who was sleeping. I mean, there's a lot of things that I feel are misstated, but I have not heard much. I don't hear anybody say, boy, if he had not fought the police, then this wouldn't have happened. I rarely will you hear that. You'll see it in comment sections, but...
You would think that would be the case, but in the case of Geronimo was his name, the cop that shot...
Philando Castile,
he was complying.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that all issues would be solved. I'm saying if people would comply, if there was an emphasis on compliance, then many of these incidents would not occur. I'm not trying to get anybody off the hook either. I'm just saying that if the idea is for people to end up alive, or at least to feel that police aren't out to kill people, if they comply, I think a lot of these incidents would not happen. But I can tell from your silence that you don't agree.
No. I mean, I agree to a degree, because there are incidents where it's outrageous that, you know, like the, you know, Breonna Taylor incident as well. I mean,
that's an entirely different thing, though.
I agree, but does noncompliance also mean that the use of force then is justified immediately?
No, it means the use of force is possible.
Sure.
Who actually beats the shit out of the police?
Trayvon Martin, although he wasn't wasn't a cop.
I mean, nobody wins. I don't know why.
No, but I do
some
feel
people
like
want to fight. But I don't hear people talking about it. I really don't. I don't hear people say, because I think they're afraid to say it, because they're going to be viewed as being pro police or anti, you know, the person that's dead. I don't hear people saying, well, it's too bad he fought the police, because they could have just arrested him, and he could have gone to jail for DUI.
Was George Floyd compliant at all, or no?
Yeah, I think he was compliant, pretty much. I mean, enough. But George Floyd and if you want to base everything on one thing, then we're not going to get anywhere. Philando Castile and George Floyd are completely separate things. Philando Castile was looking for, or was getting his gun papers or something.
His license, yeah.
Yeah, and I have no idea. I honestly still don't know what happened in that thing. I have no idea. George Floyd was insane. We all saw it. Nobody thinks it was anything but dead wrong.
But the mistake, I think, comes when someone is can't breathe, and they treat that as noncompliance because they're trying just to be able to breathe and get away so they can breathe.
Well, I don't think George Floyd is even comparable to Rayshard Brooks. I don't even think those two cases, I think they bear little resemblance. In fact, I think you will find that a lot of police will say that it fell within the boundaries. Or in Brandon, I read what you were reading. In USA Today, it said, what is it, lawful is awful?
Lawful but awful.
You're talking about the Wendy's one?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to be charged.
Well, then that doesn't work. Why would there not be something put in place by now that would not make that lawful? That would say
define threat.
I'm not an expert at this. I'm just saying.
No, I know, but that you're wondering what the problem is. That's the problem. I mean,
in that case, I think the threat is
if he fought with the police like he did, then they feel threat.
He's already a threat.
So when does that threat end? Does it end if he's running away? I don't know. Does it end if he's running away and shooting a taser behind his back?
Well, if he's shooting a taser, I think if you're shooting a taser at a cop, that's probably, I think that's threatening at a minimum. But, you know, if you want to handcuff the police and say, look, unless you're threatened with a gun, don't shoot your gun. Or, you know, and also the way the law works is you shoot to eliminate the threat. So what happens is if somebody's a marginal threat, but they're a big enough threat that it's an awful but lawful shooting, then they're going to shoot to kill. They're not going to shoot to stop the guy.
I personally feel if someone's shot in the back, I don't know how much. I mean, and not firing a gun at the same time, I don't know why that is so threatening.
I don't think it's that threatening.
But if we just want to apprehend them because, you know, he stole a taser and he fought with them, then
he's shot in the back sounds like he's running away and he can't even see the cop. He's turning and firing a taser at the cop.
Okay.
It's not okay. It is the fact. He was. I mean, you can see it light up. And that doesn't mean
So he was still a threat in your eyes. That's fine.
Am I threatened by him? Probably a little bit, but I would shoot him. I mean, I'm not a cop. And I agreed with the mayor of Atlanta who said, what he could do is not what he should do. And that's where I just find this big disconnect. What the fuck? Fix the way people are trained. Train them differently. Do something. But, I mean, to just go on and on like, I hope this never happens again is stupid.
Yeah.
I said when the protest started, I said, you know what? Something's going to happen. Something crazy is going to happen. And we're going to be all
you're
over.
Stupid.
Because now we have people. Now we have people in encounters with the police every night in every city over a police shooting or a police George Floyd's death, which is probably worse than the shootings. And now we have Rayshard Brooks. And, if you say, you know, there's a case, honestly, I saw this on not cops. Body cam. Had a case where a guy is doing exactly what Rayshard Brooks was doing, but he had a gun. And while he was running, he shot the police, two cops, and killed both of them. And he was on Facebook posting not too long after that, like basically saying goodbye to people. I mean, it was an incredibly weird, bizarre case. But if he had shot him, he would have shot him technically in the back, but his back was to the police, but he was shooting them with a gun. Rayshard Brooks doesn't have a gun. He's got a taser, so it's not even apples and apples. But just saying, you can be a threat with your back to somebody. The guy in Pittsburgh had his back to the cops. He was running away.
Yeah, but they also had reason to believe he had a gun because they had the magazine.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I don't have a problem with that either.
Well, you know, it's not up to me. I'm just saying that if you're going to say lawful is awful or, you know, I can do it, but he shouldn't do it. Well, then close the fucking loophole. Do something. But because lawful shouldn't be awful. I think it's pretty simple.
Well, I mean, but in that job, why not?
Oh, it's a terrible shooting, but it's within the law. I mean, we've been doing that for years. Mm-hmm. Case after case. I charged him, but I don't know. And then, you know, not guilty. And everyone gets upset. And it may be. I've often felt that it's the response, it's the lack of punishment that makes people the maddest of all. But when they look at it from the policeman's eyes,
sure, I don't think they understand the law's different.
Who?
The general public.
You mean different for the police?
Yeah.
The qualified immunity.
And it should be. It's an insane fucking job.
Yeah. I just don't know how you can, you know, it's sort of like the million other things that get kicked down the road. Everything gets kicked down the road, and either someone has to agree that, hey, this is the best we can do, and everybody's got to be okay with it, or they've got to do something. And, you know, defunding the police doesn't seem like, I think the 67% are against it. And it sounds, like I said, Ilhan Omar yesterday said, no police, they're better than the police we have. Really? I'd like to see that. I don't know how anyone can honestly think that. She's a representative of the United States.
She's also incredibly extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But no police, I mean, it's stupid to even discuss.
I don't think that's going to fly. I don't think that's going to get out of committee. So that's just her appealing. That's just her pandering to her base, as many politicians do.
Well, that's all everyone does.
I don't think it's worthy of even discussing.
It's not.
It's a stupid remark.
You're on our team or you're not on our team. And if you're on our team, you can do anything. If you're not on our team, you can't do anything.
I agree with Sterling.
He's always been very wise. I'm even discussing. Such a stupid.
Such a wise man.
I have to say that the Howard Stern story just to me was amazing because it's the third time, very recently, and I listen to Howard as much as anybody probably, and I don't want him canceled, but I was just amazed at the difference in coverage if you're on the team than if you're off the team. Howard Stern is the king of all media, and this audio and video trended. Actually, I had complaints for us playing it.
Yeah, it's pretty rough to listen
to. Yeah, I mean, I didn't say it. It was a news item from yesterday. It was not...
We probably should have given more warning, too, because there's someone I know who was listening to it walking around. It just starts playing really loud.
Yeah, no, I didn't really think about that.
And this person was playing through my JBL speaker clipped to my belt loop. I was walking through a parking lot, and a delivery driver who was black was walking in tandem with me for a second. I was digging through my pocket to get my phone. I was mortified. It's not like you're saying it.
What kind of speaker is he wearing on his belt?
I don't want to get into it because I don't know the answer.
Somebody walks around with a speaker all over.
It's kind of cool.
But I thought generally with the media, you know, I defended the media for a long time, and I felt that there was at least an effort to be fair. Now it's really beyond that. It's more like you serve your audience. Your audience is your audience, and their audience is their audience, and whatever our audience likes, we give them. But I still think the media tries to suggest that the media is fair and objective. But I've seen three stories in a pretty short time that are so treated so incredibly differently that I have trouble taking the media seriously on certain issues. And the Howard Stern one, to me, is right up there with any of them because Howard is the king of all media. The audio and the video was incredibly toxic. It was triggering. I mean, it was a lot of things.
Not funny.
No, it wasn't very funny either.
Not really funny, no.
And yet, no New York Times coverage, no Washington Post coverage, no network news coverage. I watched GMA this morning. No GMA, no CBS this morning. GMA covered Barbara Ferdita. She's the talent manager at ABC.
Oh, ABC who uttered
a racial slur at Robin, or not at Robin Roberts, but about Robin Roberts. That makes the news. That was on the news yesterday. But Howard Stern, no, because Howard Stern is on the left. So, nothing. In fact, the people on the left who tweet in outrage at, Meghan Markle's friend, you know, whatever, they don't tweet anything. The only tweets are people on the right. So I don't know. I just found it absolutely stunning. I thought, and I'm not, again, I say this sincerely. I don't want Howard Stern canceled, but do we have to put all these other people through all this shit because they're on the wrong team?
Well, I'm
Megyn
sure
Kelly? Look what Megyn Kelly was put through.
I'm sure if he was suspended by Sirius like the ABC News lady was, or because now you're starting to see the stories pop up in the media because he addressed it today.
Right. You're hearing his side of it.
Sure.
But what it did not trend on Twitter. No one on the left retweeted it. And therefore, you know, and maybe that's why it isn't a story.
That's stupid. But I mean, but once again, we also do complain about Twitter dictating, you know, what is news and what isn't news.
I'll tell you why it was news.
If it's wrong, then it's always wrong, no matter who does it.
It was news, no matter what, if anyone tweeted it. Howard Stern is the king of all media. He is one of the biggest broadcasters in the world.
Let me ask you this. When is it news? At what point?
When is what news?
When is the Howard Stern story a news story? Donald Trump Jr. retweets this? Look at all these clips. Look at all these clips that just popped up about Howard. I mean, when is it a story? Is it a story when he addresses it?
It's a story.
It?
I think when the video
is it when is it a, when is the, a story a story?
The video comes up. It's retweeted mostly by people on the right, but it's getting a lot of retweets, getting a lot of activity, and some people, mostly the right, are writing about it. It's clear.
Okay,
the video is, I mean, you can't argue with the video. It's news when Hannah B. sings along with a rap song. That story was on CNN. Not her apology.
Okay.
The fact that she did it. She is not, Howard Stern is the king of all media. She's Hannah B., the fucking bachelorette. Look at the ringer Megyn Kelly was put through. She discussed blackface. She never wore blackface. She discussed it. She had to have a panel of people on her show the next day. She was excoriated by all the Today Show people. I mean, on and on and on.
Well, wasn't her biggest crime making too much money at NBC and not having a big enough audience?
Well, it was, but that's not what they said. They said she's a racist. She brought up a topic she didn't understand, and she needs to apologize, and she should have had people who understand the issue on a panel, blah, 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 blah. So in other words, she gets through the ringer because she's Megyn Kelly.
Yeah, but haven't you ever been, brought to task on a job when it wasn't about exactly that thing, but they used that?
Yeah, but we're talking about the media who's supposed to be fair. The media is supposed to, they pretend, they tell you that they're fair.
I just looked up the
when
Hannah
Howard
B.
Stern escapes this thing unscathed, I say, wow, that's really amazing. But that's only one of three.
I just looked up the Hannah B. story that CNN had, and it was she apologized that after doing the video.
Okay, are you going to tell me that you think that the media has been fair about this topic, that you think Howard Stern should not have been a story on Saturday when this video emerged of probably the most triggering video of any I have seen that involved the N-word?
I think it's a story.
Or blackface.
Well, I think it's a story once it's either addressed or isn't addressed by either him.
But that's not how people do it.
Well, I'm just telling. So Hannah B. became a story after
Barb Ferdita has not responded.
No, I know, but it became a story when ABC News suspended her, and ABC had a story on it on Sunday.
Sirius isn't going to suspend Howard Stern. Sirius.
And so nobody is suspending Hannah B. either because she didn't really have a job.
Noting that Hannah B. just recently saved somebody's life from drowning. That's breaking news today.
Roseanne Barr.
But
Roseanne Barr said something and she didn't respond to it. You're fired. In minutes, she was fired.
And that the story is because there was a reaction to the action. Hannah B.'s story.
I haven't been able to make the point.
CNN now has the story because Howard Stern has responded. There's a reaction to the action. That's when it becomes a story.
Respond to things. They never respond to them. Bill Clinton never responded to people saying he was on Pedophile Island. He never responded. It's still a story.
A story within the Jeffrey Epstein story.
You don't have to wait for someone to respond to something to make it a story.
Okay. If you want just the action
I've never seen that video.
Stories, that's fine.
No, when people say the N-word or they wear blackface, they become a story immediately. No one waited for Ralph Northam to respond to his blackface, did they? Am I crazy? I mean, you could go with... And if you think I'm crazy, tell me. I'm not trying to jam this down anyone's throat. This is my own observation.
Well, maybe in this instance, maybe the journalistic organizations that actually take a little extra time to figure things out are taking their time and trying to make a measured response to the Howard Stern thing.
But when are they measured about
anything? The media who put everything out there, right or wrong, factual or not, are quick to throw things out there.
But they aren't measured. They're not measured. They're not measured. Look at Barbecue Becky. Barbecue Becky called the police on a black person. She was a big story.
Yeah, and those shouldn't
immediately.
Be, those shouldn't be stories.
But she
until
was.
Until something happens.
She is not the king of all media. Howard Stern, and I feel like I'm picking on Howard Stern. I'm not. I'm just saying that was a huge story. And he had denied that he ever said that on The View, additionally, which was part of the video. Don Cherry was a story, was a big story. Didn't wait for Don Cherry to respond. The dumbass in Central Park was a huge story. She was fired. Don Cherry was fired. And you know what? You know what's interesting? I saw a story in the New York Times today, and I didn't even know who it was. I mean, I've heard the name, but Anthony Sabatini?
Never heard of him.
Anthony Sabatini. Wore blackface. He's a representative in Florida. And, you know, just some pieces of the story, the white face that refuses to see itself in its own monstrous creations. Blackface is grounded in white supremacy, on and on and on. He refuses to resign. He wore blackface at age 16 when he and his black friend dressed up as each other.
Cool.
And he called it a, actually he didn't say much. I think he said it was a silly prank, and I think he said that it was reported properly. I mean, it was reported accurately that that's what happened. But again, he is on the wrong team. So, you know, we grind him up. And Howard, you know, I don't know if people are afraid of Howard. Maybe that's part of it.
So what team is Ralph Northam on? Because everybody shit on him, and he still has his job.
I don't know what team he's on, but all I know is when it was found that he had blackface, whammo. I don't think people waited for Ralph Northam to respond. But Ralph Northam,
It is different when it's a public. I know you disagree, but when it's a public employee.
Well, to some degree, I do agree, but Howard Stern is not somebody hiding on SiriusXM. Howard Stern is a gigantic person. But we can agree to disagree. I thought it was shocking that it was not, didn't even make the morning news today. Didn't make the morning news yesterday. And
I mean, it's everywhere now because he has responded to it.
Yes, and that was a measured response, too.
I mean, if you want to be mad because it's not trending on Twitter, that's fine. I mean, I would be more...
No, I'm not mad.
I would be more upset because you have all these, all the Chrissy Teigens and
yeah, they're not outraged. They're not really outraged because they're only outraged when the person is not someone in their on their team.
Yeah, and that's horse shit.
So, but the network news, I expect them to have a reasonably consistent presentation.
It's political bullshit.
And the same with, whether it's Morning News or CBS Morning News or GMA, I expect them to tell me when newsmakers make news, and that video was really strong. In fact, you can't even compare it to Ralph Northam. Ralph Northam wore blackface in 1981. Mm-hmm. The other guy was Curtis Blow at a Halloween party. I mean, and those guys got raked. And I have a hard time taking anyone seriously or suggesting that, you know, this doesn't have something to do with who he is and, you know, what side he's on. The Joe Biden story, too, the woman that accused him of sexual assault, that story was, you know, and if the media was measured about it, that's good. And I didn't, you know, I don't think that girl disqualified Joe Biden from being the president, but the story was ignored. He was interviewed 7 times on one network and it wasn't even brought up. That was, to me, a complete departure from the news media prior cases, not just, you know, politicians, but many cases. And then the coronavirus is the third one, because the media treated the coronavirus as a deathly, I mean, you're virtually a murderer if you go and you are part of a crowd while the coronavirus is here. But that changed the last 3 weeks. It wasn't even mentioned until the end of the week. And it was determined that racism is more dangerous than the coronavirus, which is an interesting conclusion. I didn't know such things could be measured, but the people that protested weren't going to be stopped anyway, so it really didn't matter. But now I'm noticing that yesterday there were a lot of stories about coronavirus increases, and they're all blamed on the states reopening. The only thing I saw about the crowds were that 1 out of 70 people at one protest has coronavirus. And I don't know. Did you see that story?
I sent it to you. That was the Minneapolis one.
Yeah. So, in other words, the crowds at the protests. Well, the two girls on the news yesterday had coronavirus and they wore masks. And the people at the protests were not all wearing masks, especially at the beginning.
Sure.
There's a huge inconsistency here, and I don't even really see any effort to address it, or, you know, I don't know. And I'm not a person that says fake news. It's gotten so stunningly, it's stunning that the media doesn't even make an effort to make sense or to be consistent. But you could bring up a million.
It all depends, though, because if there's a particular, take Fox News or OAN, if they report something, you don't even really, no one really cares, because I just figure that to be, you know, too right-leaning. I mean, shit, we have people leaving college because their coaches wore OAN shirts, you know? So
that'll be reported on the mainstream media, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's trending.
The mainstream media now, though?
Chuba Hubbard.
I still think it's ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN,
MSNBC, Fox.
MSNBC, I don't know. I still don't put them in the CNN category. Fox could be the mainstream media, but the thing is, Fox reports things that the other ones won't report, and the other ones report things that Fox isn't reporting. Like, you could see... I'm trying to think of an example.
I know that they just sort of cancel each other out, but is Facebook then considered to be a mainstream media? Because a lot of people use it like that.
No. They're not. There's no filter for Facebook. The mainstream media, the NBC News, CBS News, filters. ABC News, they would tell you that they have a series of filters that they go through before they report on anything.
But people's perception is their reality, and if their perception is that Facebook is their main source of news because it pleases them or it validates them.
It's pretty scary.
It's everyone just wants confirmation bias.
And, you know, the story that was getting talked about as far as racism was Barbara Ferdita, who nobody fucking knows. And I don't know if the treatment of Barbara Ferdita is fair. I have no idea. But in terms of who would be a more newsworthy person, Barbara Ferdita or Howard Stern, it's not even close. I mean, it's not even the same league. But the Barbara Ferdita story was kind of incredible because... Within the story, she was criticized for not going to the National Association of Black Journalists conventions. And this was one of a couple times they did this. And they said, the NBC person went 28 times in 30 years. But NBC, if you remember, NBC is the Antichrist. But now all of a sudden, NBC are the good guys.
Yeah, because of Ronan Farrow.
I mean, isn't it a little strange that you're looking to NBC for guidance on how to treat your employees? Oh, and the other thing about Barbara Ferdita, and this isn't really about her. I don't like her name either.
She sounds like a joy to work for.
Yeah, no, she is. No, she sounds like she calls people cunts openly.
Yeah.
She said Robin Roberts, I guess they made a big offer to her and she didn't like it. And she said, well, we're not asking her to pick cotton. That's that's the biggest thing that in the entire story, if you ask me.
Yeah, but why do you say something like that?
Because she's important and she's mercurial and she's that way. I mean,
Oh.
I mean, don't ask me to justify it. I'm not saying that.
No. She just sounds kind of like a dipshit if she would say something like that at the level that she was at. She worked at CBS for a while, recruiting
talent. Well, that's,
talent.
You know, isn't it kind of weird that she leaves ABC for CBS and in 2011, ABC hires her back?
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Well, someone there liked her. It's probably mad that she left.
Well, she's probably...
She also, by the way, and this is probably part of the issue, she oversees the diversity and inclusion efforts for ABC News.
Well, the... They talked to, and I don't even know this anchor's name. There's an ABC News anchor who is black.
Candace Gibson or
no.
Mara Schiavacampo?
I can't remember the name. I have never seen the guy on TV. Anyway, he said that, and I think a couple other people agreed, that in terms of hiring, that ABC is very diverse and inclusive.
Well, it sounds like she did her job.
Well, that's what she's hanging her hat on. She said... I mean, she made some big bodacious claims. It doesn't mean they're true. It could be. I have no idea, honestly. Maybe we can find out from NBC what the appropriate thing to do is. But she, it's just, she's a very toxic person. You know, calling women cunts. Some of it was so obvious. But, you know, in the...
She also had no problem in doing management's bidding when those pussies wouldn't do it and firing people and yelling at people. I don't know if he's caught that part of that story or not.
When she had to yell at who?
Yeah, she would. I gotta find it, but they basically like needed the hammer to be laid down on people, and Fredita was like, "I'll do it."
Oh yeah, she's the problem solver. She's the I mean, everybody has people like that.
Back up! I got these cunts.
But you know,
she would say
at this level. I mean, we're talking about some of the biggest news talent in the world.
Look out, cunts! Here comes Fredita.
I don't think it's all, you know, a bowl of cherries dealing with these people. That doesn't mean you should call people cunts. I mean,
hey.
I would think she'd be smart enough not to do that. But she sounds like she's pretty. She's not afraid to say what she thinks.
Power hungry. She likes bossing people around. There's also the issue with David Muir. They were supposed to be hosting this round table.
David Muir's a racist.
But he's gay, so it's
what?
Okay. Is that how that works?
Well, some things do trump some things.
They were having a town hall with Obama about race relations, and everybody on the team preparing with David Muir were all white, and some of the black journalists had a problem with that, as I would think they would, right?
Yeah.
And so they wrote a couple letters, which Fredita... I think dubbed it the Black Manifesto whenever they talked about the document.
Cut it out, Fredita.
good one, Fredita. We're giving her an R in her name, too.
Oh, it's Fredita?
Yeah, F-E-D-I-D-A.
Yeah.
But I like Fredita much better.
I do like Fredita better, too.
It sounds delicious.
That's a new name.
She worked for Peter Jennings in the early days, which I thought...
Well, cancel him.
Nice going, Jennings.
No. Cancer cancel
love
him.
Peter Jennings.
But you know, the most, well, there was a lot of, this is a very gossipy article. It was, you know what? They did, in the Robin Roberts section, Robin said that when she wanted all these people to be hired, when David Muir was having his whites only meeting for the town hall, and Robin... not only suggested that a black producer should be part of any story, she said that, or any big story, I think she said. She said that, you know, she had a few people that they should hire. And according to Robin, they blew them off and they sought other employment or something like that. But anyway, Robin was told that, well, they're pushing back on hiring all these people you suggested. And Robin said, were they carrying torches and chanting, "You will not replace us"? Which, you know, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I know what it means, but
yeah. Isn't she quoting Shia LaBeouf?
She's quoting it's a white supremacist statement.
From Charlottesville, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you will not replace us.
Jews will not replace us. What they
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
What was LaBeouf saying?
No one remembers LaBeouf's art.
He will not divide us.
Yeah. He will not divide us. Right, the opposite.
So that was. I mean, that whole segment about, you know, she's not been cutting. And then, you know, Robin gets all pissed, but they never did hire any of these people. And again, the most, I think this is the part that I want to know more about is apparently there's a lot of non-disclosure agreements at ABC News, just like NBC. So what's going on? What are people doing? I mean,
I feel
don't
like
you
that's
wonder?
Industry standard now, though. Everyone signs those.
I got to tell you, I did not know there were so many non-disclosures. When I read about the R. Kelly story, I was appalled. And the Matt Lauer story, why are these people not allowed to talk? If these are real crimes, then they should absolutely be allowed to talk about them.
But I feel like maybe the management makes you sign that just in case something happens that they don't know is going to happen so that you can't talk about it.
Well, there's that. And then there's also they give them a pile of money to not talk about something they're specifically involved in. But this goes on at ABC, too. And I bet you, you know, if we knew about all the non-disclosure agreements, can you imagine the shit we would know?
ABC also just had a town hall on racism with their own employees, with Bob Iger, on June 4th, all ABC and Disney employees. And one of the big nuggets to come out of there is Michael Strahan shitting all over Kelly Ripa.
Oh, yeah, you know, he hates her.
And
yeah.
How that ended. Michael said there were some very tense situations with executives who got argumentative and loud on the show, and he was very aware that he couldn't speak up or raise his voice, as he was worried he would be seen as threatening. Lovable Michael Strahan threatening? Never. Strahan? Everyone loves him.
Yeah, he's...
But he was mad because he felt like he was hired with Kelly and Michael to be a partner, not a sidekick!
Oh,
what
of course
I have
not.
To say, I
she
thought he was
the
really
show
good
for
on that
20
show,
years
and I
before
thought
he was
sort
on.
Of funny.
Strahan?
Yeah, and good on his feet. And
better than
Seacrest,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, by the way,
likeable, too.
What is going on with Seacrest? He's got to move to the West Coast for his health?
Yeah, he's got something
he's got
going on. Seriously, a lot of people are worried about
they
him.
They said that
slurring.
He said he doesn't have anything going on. He said, no, I don't. I didn't have a stroke. I didn't have a lazy eye. I
5,000 jobs.
Yeah.
There's
he's something
reenacting
going
Dick
on.
Clark.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though.
he's modeled his career after him, so.
Rudy's on the AliExpress. the video, did you guys watch the videos that that people are putting out there of Ryan Seacrest? What's wrong with Ryan Seacrest?
Mm-hmm. I didn't see him. No.
If I didn't know better, because I don't know better, because Ryan Seacrest seems like about as straight a person as you can be, mm-hmm. I would have thought he was on something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you? I don't know. Trudy, did you see him?
Yeah. No, I didn't see him, but I would think that exact thing.
He was kind of spacy. He was kind of,
slurring his words.
Yeah, slurring his words.
His eye is drooping and,
Well, the eye drooping, that would seem like something's wrong with him, like Bell's palsy or something like that. I don't know. I just thought the whole thing was bizarre.
Very much.
So he says, I'm fine. Nothing's wrong with me. It's all bullshit. And then,
by the way, someone called in AIDS and said, now this was just with someone, that they saw you with Terry Hatcher.
Miss Larry.
So stupid. What's all Larry doing? Is he dead yet?
No. He's not dead.
But didn't he, wasn't he in the hospital not that long ago?
He was. He was on his deathbed, and he took his wife out of his will, remember?
That's right. Good move, King.
And now he's alive as hell.
Well done. They got a divorce, right?
Is there a divorce?
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, I think the marriage is burned.
It seems like when you publicly announce that you're taking your wife out of your will, that the divorce is probably
that
pretty close
behind.
That
dying ASAP.
Well, I don't know if they reconciled like Aaron Carter in the girl
I saw
whose
that.
Tattoo he has on his head.
Yeah, that's Melanie. Aaron Carter and Melanie were so in love after, was it 3 weeks or 4 weeks, that they first of all, she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. She's going to have his baby. They were also making the pornographic content for people that paid $10 a month to his, $20 a month to his, whatever it was. Then they broke up and he called her all these names and she called him names and they both swore they were getting their tattoos removed. She was in a lesbian relationship within days and was making porno for, I think the same thing he was doing. It was one of those monthly, you could pay $20 a month and see her and this lesbo get it on.
Mm-hmm.
OnlyFans.
Aaron, 8 hours after announcing the breakup, was with another girl.
Maybe she went in and wanted to lay a couple of guys. He's going to get out of hand.
Boy, they are going to bone. I can feel it.
So,
What about his new girlfriend that he had for a while? I mean,
she's gone. He dumped her. But this old girlfriend.
I'm going to make a crazy prediction that he gets back with her at some point.
The one that he's with now, he called the police on twice.
Yeah.
So
what, the new girlfriend?
The new old girlfriend. He's back with the pregnant one, that was doing tattooed. The lesbian porn.
Yeah.
Oh. Jesus Christ.
I mean, he just needs to. Is there some way to stop him from having sexual urges? Yes. Can we do something, please? Saltpeter. Does anyone say that anymore? I remember my college teammates used to say, I put saltpeter in his lemonade. And I'd like, what is saltpeter? And then that
he
was kind of a thing for a while.
His penis hard no matter how much he tries.
I never hear anybody say, saltpeter.
Breaking news with Mort Grimm.
Did you know Larry? It's not really breaking news because it's May 22nd. Did you know Larry King's launching a podcast?
No, I did not. I'm excited, what? Though.
Do you know he signed a $5 million deal to do a podcast?
Larry?
What the?
Yes.
Oh, the millionth question?
Guess who's going to produce it, too? This is really exciting.
Seacrest.
My son, Chance.
Chance? Is that the one with his last...
Let's see what it says.
Oh, my God, that's stupid. Chance is probably, what, 25 or something?
21.
I'm sure he'll be a great producer.
Seventh.
You run a business with your son. You couldn't even find another grown man to go into business with.
So here's the story. He's gearing up to his first ever podcast. It's called The Millionth Question, an entertainment celebrity interview podcast targeted for mid-June debut. Hour long will feature guests across pop culture, sports, music, and comedy, which of none of which he knows. Podcast title's a nod to King's lengthy record. Okay. The chance to take the podcast interview show beyond the world of politics is intriguing to me, King told Variety. Because he had a stroke last year, but I'm okay now as long as I'm alert and inquisitive. Why not? He's teaming up to launch the podcast with Chance King and former Variety Theater impersonator Jeff Beecher. Under the duo's new Form 444 media banner, I jumped at the chance when Jeff and Chance approached me, Larry King said. So basically, Chance
jumped
King's
the
like,
chance when you heard $5 million.
Yeah. Chance is like, Dad, I got a great deal. Why don't you do a podcast? I'll produce it. It's only going to have 11 episodes. $5 million for 11 episodes?
Must be nice.
How does he fall into money all the time?
This is embarrassing. Hey.
Did you guys see Dick Burton got married over the weekend?
See who, Trudy?
Dick Burton got married over the weekend.
You did?
Dick Burton got married?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How old is she?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Oh, that's a rude
sorry.
Question.
Is that bad?
That's by far the best question.
Come on,
that's
what everybody
by
wants to know.
Far the best question.
I'm glad he's happy, but come on,
it's a terrible question.
I mean, it's
she sounds hot.
I'm gonna just assume because Dick Burton's a classy guy that she's not Joanne's age. She's not one of Joanne's friends.
Well, you never know. I'm just wondering.
Well, I was visiting Joanne at Channel 7, and, Carolyn Clifford, I'd never met her. She's so wonderful, and we just fell in love.
Carolyn Clifford. Boy, that would trip people up.
That would. No, well, Carolyn's married. Carolyn's married, I think.
We're getting hitched.
Isn't she? I'm pretty sure.
I think so. Oh, yeah, she totally.
She looks very. She
was
very pretty.
Or he fell in love with Baby. He was, I met Baby from Joanne, and she's so sweet.
I'm plowing into it.
Now, Glenda.
Oh, guess who?
Glenda's
got to
be
married.
Guess who
was there for the ceremony? Art Volo.
Well, Art Volo, Radio's best friend.
Someone had to film it.
Oh boy!
But no word on who she is, or
her name is Donna Hammer.
Doctor.
Oh, there's a picture of the lovely couple. That's okay. It's age appropriate.
Yeah, no, they look very nice.
Lovely. Although I hope Volo didn't
looks
take that
pretty
picture.
Pretty young to me.
If Volo take that picture. It's not terribly centered.
Let me see.
Either that or they cropped out two other people.
What do you mean? The one in front of the fireplace?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's artistic, though. He has
it's
the
not artistic.
Cake in the foreground.
I'm going to guess.
I think he cropped somebody out because it's the size of the picture.
Hold his dick.
86? Is that what he is?
Is it? No way. No way. Is he 80? No. Is he really 86?
I thought so.
Are you kidding?
83.
Okay, I'm going to guess she's 60.
Oh, my God, no way.
Thank you. I'm going to guess she's 20 years younger.
Okay.
And I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying.
Good for you, man.
I mean, I don't think people can run around going, oh, my God, she's too hot for him.
For
She's too hot for him.
She's cute. She's very attractive.
On her Facebook page.
I'll tell you what, they both, for their ages, look very... Well, I made her 63. I don't know how old she is.
Wait, they just
got... Could be 40 and she looks really old.
They got married today.
Today?
On a Monday?
I guess.
Huh. What?
Well, according to her Facebook.
It said over the weekend at radio.com.
No, maybe she just updated it today.
Oh. Okay. Mm. Okay. Well, one of the guys I've known the longest in radio is retiring at the end of the week. Guy Phillips from St. Louis.
Oh, really?
One of the longest stints in St. Louis radio appears at end Thursday when Guy Phillips pulls his last shift.
Who's
at
that
KTRS. Guy was, when Zip and I got hired in Phoenix, Guy was on KYKY in St. Louis, and we got to be friends.
K-Y-K-Y.
He's a super nice
guy. The Jelly, KYKY. Guy, they go by the Jelly?
Guy was,
guess not.
The show was...
Like it, though.
No, they don't go by the Jelly.
They should.
Wall, Mike Wall. It was Phillips and Wall. And then Wall left to go to another station in one of those, you know, deals. And Wall, I think, was a couple years later, was, I think he had a ski shop or something. And Guy, Guy continued for like another 30 years at 98 FM in St. Louis. And then he... I think he decided he wanted to work in the afternoons, and he went to this AM station. He's been there for probably 5 years or so. Hmm. But he said staying at home during coronavirus kind of got him leaning in that direction.
Really?
You know, he took over the afternoon drive show from?
Who?
Frank O'Pinion.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
Frank,
my
middle initial
God.
O, last name Pinion.
I hope that. I'm sure it's a radio name.
No!
What if his parents just made his middle name Oliver? Just always called him that. Guy Phillips, his tweets are protected. We can't even read them.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Guy is one of the funniest, funniest, funniest guys, especially
we'll
off the
know.
Air. He's funny on the air, but he's really funny off the air. No, we'll never know.
I got breaking news. You can follow the Frank Opinion podcast.
oh, really?
Yeah. He, let's see here. Let's
you get five. Is this
29 followers, which is...
Wait, 29 followers?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's, what, on Twitter?
That's your homeboy, yeah.
And he's not my homeboy. Guy Phillips is my homeboy. And he's not my homeboy.
Wait, is this really Frank Opinion's Twitter page with 16 followers? That can't be him.
Frank might not be on Twitter. I don't think he gives a fuck about stuff like that. I could be wrong. But, yeah, Guy was there when we got blown out in Phoenix, and we went and auditioned for a week on, whatchamacallit, The Pig, Casey. So we were kind of hanging with Guy that week, and it seemed like everything was going well. Guy, I remember Guy saying, well, you got in the paper a couple times. You could beat that. I mean, it wasn't a flattering thing at all.
Frank's still on the air, man.
Frank's on radio?
Yeah, 590 to the Fan.
And yeah.
The Large Morning Show in the Afternoon is the name of the show. Wow. That's kind of funny. The Large Morning Show in the Afternoon.
The Large Morning Show?
You want to hear some of it?
Not really. I know Frank. I mean, I know his show.
I have one other piece of industry news.
Stutter's Kid.
Yes?
The Drew and Mike podcast is officially up for vote on WDIV's Best Of.
Seriously?
What?
Yeah. Supposedly,
really?
Yeah.
Wait, you've been added to the nomination page?
I believe it is.
Yeah, they did a while ago.
Page.
Yeah.
What? Random.
Isn't it Vote for the Best? Isn't that what they call it?
No.
Am I talking about a different one?
Yeah, last week it was just the nominations or whatever. And to tell you the truth, I think that it's still going to be nominations until the 18th.
All that was? Wait, we have to vote for ourselves after that?
Yeah, once an hour.
Yeah, after that, then you're nominated, and then people go and vote.
Okay, well, what? We're officially on the Vote for the Best.
Aren't they dragging it out a little bit?
Oh, man, it's tough.
They have a few too many processes.
Although, I guess it's good because I'm still enjoying my Our Magazine Best Podcast honeymoon. No plaque or trophy, by the way. I've not seen anything resembling a trophy or plaque.
Bullshit.
No contact.
Didn't you guys get one of those when you won the contest back at Riff, though? You got, like, it was like
I
a plaque of the cover of the magazine.
I think there was a plaque. There was a trophy. You're right. Yeah, there was a thing. Yeah. It wasn't a plaque or a trophy. Really?
It was the cover of the magazine. Yeah. So that it was.
And they acted like we were the headline for the whole magazine, didn't they?
They didn't say. Acted like that for everybody.
They just filled it in and changed the one part and did it over and over and over and over and over. Kind of bullshit. Oh, well. Mm-hmm. All right, get us out of here. Get me out of here. Matt Stafford's wife is pregnant again, Kelly?
Yeah, what is that, four or five?
About that. I think that's four.
Wait, hasn't she been pregnant since March when she said she didn't want to live in a house with the infinity pool?
Oh, I don't think she was she pregnant.
No, I think they just were afraid the little kids would, you know.
Oh, so now we know the real truth. They need more space.
She said something about where she couldn't have four children around that pool.
Oh.
Whatever. I looked it up this morning because I thought it was a good story.
You Teen Mom OG fans will be so happy to know that Janelle Evans says that she is safe and the kids are safe, too. She was assaulted by David Eason, the guy that murdered the dog.
Surprise.
Yeah. And got her kicked off Teen Mom, and then they broke up, and now she's back with him, and he assaulted her. But, I mean, to post like, okay, you guys, it's okay, I'm safe, and so are the kids, when she goes back to this guy. Yeah. By the way, she called 911 once and said he was choking her. And then she said, I just made it up. It's crazy.
She'll always be with this turd.
Then he killed the dog, and she went back. And then she said he didn't kill the dog, and then she said he did kill the dog. She also doesn't agree with his unsecured bond.
Well, she would know. I mean, she's been in and out of the legal system so much.
Oh, this guy is horrible people. Disaster. Total disaster. All right. Well, we'll see you tomorrow.
You unplugged your mic again.
I did.
Yeah.
Thanks to Derek St. Holmes and Gary Graff. And I guess that's about it. Anything else? Yeah, you can like us on Facebook. You can review us on iTunes, Facebook, or any other place the Drew and Mike Show is heard. Thank you, and we'll see ya.
Okay, bye. Thank you.